that like riverboat. I have actually thought about maybe breaking up the committee into two or three groups during that period and actually going to one or two crucial places. But I don't think Overberg will be one of them because it's got no problems. It's just small. It's the Busbach Ridge and the Borshellos and those that we should be looking at. But we'll talk about that first. But just I'll let them circulate so you can also feel happy and glowing that they like what you did to them. The department, nice to see all of you. Nice to see you've got some women here, Toko, at last, except for yourself. This thing with all these males in this department, I'm not too sure, you know. That's why the department doesn't run well. Just got men there. You have people like Babalwa, she knows how to spin the things and so on. Make it look good for the department. All right. We're going to start with an input from the department to just give us an overview of the two catchment management agencies. And then, of course, we'll deal with the two agencies. Who's giving the input? Toko? Miss? Is it Sigwaza? Sigwaza. Miss Toko Sigwaza, Chief Director, Institutional Oversight. Please, Teta, Koluma, Prat, speak.
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity once again to present to you the future of water resource management in the country. I think last week we appeared before you, but it was mainly around water boards, and yesterday around TCTA. We are now shifting to the issues of which are critical. I think if you look at the budget, you might say that these institutions are small, but in terms of they are very critical if we want to manage water resources in the country. The catchment management agencies derive their policy and legislative mandate from Chapter 7 of the National Water Act, which outlined the need of managing water resources at a local level. They are also listed in the Public Finance Management Act as Schedule 3 entities. And the minister, as the public trustee of the national water resources, has to ensure that water is protected, used, developed, conserved, and managed in a sustainable and equitable manner. And it is along these lines that the minister has established the vision of developing a water resource catchment management agencies in order for water resource management to happen at a regional and at a local level. The reasons for establishing CMAs are mainly to ensure equitable access to water, also to ensure that we achieve sustainable use of water, and also to achieve efficient use of water. And this is in line with the National Water Resource Strategy, which is currently being reviewed, which promotes the issues of water resources management at a local level. I think our vision, Chair, is that if we have these institutions operating efficiently at a local level, we will be able to deal with the issues of poor water quality, the issues of unlawful water use, all those issues that require local management of water resources. So their primary role is to manage water resources in defined water management areas. And the water management areas, we have 19 water management areas in South Africa. We will later show you the map of how those water management areas are located. They also coordinate the functions of other institutions involved in water-related matters. They also ensure that local communities are involved in water resource management. In terms of what has happened with the catchment management agencies, the two that we have.
What section of the Act deals with this, catchment management agencies?
It's Chapter 7 of the National Water Act. And in terms of the what has happened thus far, we have delegated the initial functions in terms of Section 80 of the National Water Act. So I think the two CMAs are currently, they have been delegated those functions, and they are currently performing those functions. So they have been investigating and advising interested persons on the protection, use, development, conservation, manage and control of water resources in their water management areas. One of the key issues that they have done is to develop the catchment management strategies. They will later go into details into how they have developed the catchment management strategies. They also coordinate related activities of water users and of water management institutions within the water management areas. They also promote coordination of implementation of catchment management strategy and also the local development plans in terms of the Water Services Act. And I think they have been very good in promoting community participation at local level. In terms of the functions that need to be delegated, I will not go into detail. But the Schedule 3 of the National Water Act has also been delegated in December 2010 to the catchment management agencies, except for one area which we have not now delegated. But I think, Chair, they can now continue with the issues of water resource management, ensuring that the water resources are protected at a local level. And I think that slide, in terms, there are other powers that we have also delegated, Section 34.2, to register an existing lawful water use and also to verify the lawfulness or extent of existing water use, and also Section 92 to establish water user associations. I think you will recall that we have a number of irrigation boards that are currently not complying in terms of the National Water Act. So the catchment management agencies will be helping us in terms of establishing water user associations. There are six CMAs were gazetted administratively, and they are listed there, but we only have two that are operational at the moment. That is Inkomazi and Briede Overbeck. Those two will be presenting today. Chairperson, if you can remember that the vision of developing a catchment management agency is outlined in the National Water Act. So the process has been slow in terms of developing the catchment management agency. So as you would hear today, that there has been teething problems which we are working on. I would only highlight the few areas where we have had challenges. I think it has been a learning curve. And
they called agencies.
Yes.
Now, how are they formed? What are they? I mean, they're a company, what are they?
Public entities.
Just a public entity, the structure that the minister has created.
Yes.
And you've now listed all the things what they do, but
yes,
just tell me in practical terms what it is that they do. Because, I mean, the way you've described it is, it looks like they run everything the department runs.
It's mainly water resource management functions.
Yeah, but what does that mean?
It's issues relating to the protection of the environment and the water resources. Issues relating to the water quality, they need to ensure that the water quality in their area is protected. They also need to ensure that the water users, they comply with the standards, like the issues of discharges to the environment. They also need to ensure that people they comply with.
Do they operate? Do they just make their own decisions? Do they have original powers?
They have powers as vested in terms of the National Water Act. Those powers are delegated by the minister.
They exercise those exclusively. They do it themselves. They exercise all those things you said. water, the quality of water, all that stuff, they have the power to do it there, not the ministry, because it's been delegated.
Yeah, once it is delegated, yes, we are delegating to them progressively.
And in terms of what do they operate? In terms of what guidelines and that, do they just do what they want to?
No.
Apart from the National Water Acquisition Legislative Framework, there is the National Water Resource Strategy as an umbrella strategy for the country. And then each and every catchment management agency must develop their own strategy for that catchment, but must be in line with the overall national strategy. So they can't develop strategies that is out of line of the national strategy. So that is natural, the national strategy gives the national overall strategy, but they can make specific strategies for their own catchment to suit their own area, their own local circumstances. But of course, it must be in line with the national strategy.
They give licenses.
Not now, but the future. Once that function is delegated, it can be delegated to them.
But I'm not understanding why we've created separate agencies that are performing the duties of the department. I mean, you've got these, you know, I mean, this department has got duplication. You've got all these regional structures with DDG Mbasa in charge of them that it should be fulfilling all these tasks. Now we've got the catchment management agencies who are doing the same tasks that the department has to perform within a broad framework as Al-Khad has explained. I find difficulty trying to understand the rationale. I understand the idea of getting things done locally and so on, but of course there are huge dangers with that. Huge dangers. Now I'm trying to understand what is the thinking behind this, that you now create an agency and it's not a unit of the department that's actually fulfilling these tasks which the department should be fulfilling.
Eventually the regional offices will scale down in size and in function as most of these functions will then shift to the agency. So you have that at regional level, the department will shift many of its functions to the agencies.
What I can't get my head around is what was the thinking? If they're going to do the work at those regional structures which are under the direct authority of the minister, and therefore we can have one policy, one way of operating in the country, you now decentralize it to different structures who have to operate within a strategy, and therefore you can have a whole host of different things happening. What is the thinking behind this? Create separate agencies. I can imagine that's the reason. The reason I'm asking the question is probably the reason there's only two of them.
Can I just try and respond to that?
Yes.
The reason we're establishing catchment management agencies, one is it's a component of integrated water resource management, and that's the way to manage water in the country. And one of the vehicles is to have extension of the department. It's a service delivery vehicle where the whole intent is decentralization, where public participation can take place, where people are empowered, they can make decisions around local issues. So ultimately, the regional office, which performs the water resource management function, that will be ring-fenced and go across to the CMA.
You're not telling me why. I mean, all the things you're saying are logical. You're not telling me why it has been taken from the department and be put in an agency. Why does that necessary?
It's also important to ring-fence regulatory.
Why create more structures and more things when we already... I mean, you must give me a reason for it. I'm wanting to understand the reasoning behind it. Why is it we have to move it to an agency? All the things you are saying now, it's got nothing to do with what you're saying, because you can do all that stuff in the department. You are doing it in the department. But what is this need to go and create new agencies with new boards, new boards of directors, whole thing again, when you've got all those officials in the department that should be doing this work? In any case, you're going to create the strategies for it. I'm trying to work out what is the thinking. Then I can express myself whether I think it's a good or a bad thing. But why... Who
standards.
I mean, when they created these things in the documentation, what do they say is the reason they have to have it in an agency with separate boards, separate everything? What is that reason? I mean, what the lady is saying to me now, I mean, that's, you know, the better you decentralize, the better you do work. But it doesn't explain why this vehicle has been chosen of separate agencies. I mean, the department keeps doing it. You create separate water boards, you create separate agencies, you create separate, and it's hugely costly. It creates boards, it creates management structures, it creates what the hell. Instead of just getting you lot coming to report, we have to get all these agencies with all their boards and all their whole, each one's got a CEO and a CFO, and some of them are getting 4 million rand a year salaries. I'm trying to work out what is the thinking behind this. I'm just logically, why? Well, actually, maybe it is, you know. I mean, that's the only good rationale that it could be. But there might be a logical reason why someone of you thought that this is important. What is that reason?
Can I try to respond?
Yes.
The reasoning is that there is a job that the department is currently doing. The department is not doing that job sufficiently. Let us admit it. There are issues of local management in terms of quantity and quality that the department doesn't get it. I think when it comes to, for example, the Greater Overberg, they will tell you that there may be one or two people currently in a regional office that have done this job. Now they've got, you can say, job creation, more people doing it, but we as a department, we are not doing the job.
I understand what you're saying, and that's very kind of you to be honest with me. The problem is it doesn't explain the vehicle. If you haven't got the capacity and you haven't got enough people to do it, by creating a new vehicle, by getting those people to do it, and then phasing out the regional offices, I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I hear what you're saying, but what you have to explain to me is this vehicle. This costly vehicle of, instead of having a department with more capacity, you go and create structures. Now, how many of them? 18? 19? 19 structures with all their rigmarole and their boards and their... Now you've got... You see what I don't understand. You've got one chief director and you've got a lot of Indians. A lot of chiefs and then a few Indians below the chief, all the chiefs that you've got. Now you want to create 19 of them with all their fiefdom. Can you see why I'm asking what's the logic of it? I mean, if you're just telling me we're creating jobs, then that's the honest answer.
Can I add? Let us take a practical example. If in a river system like the Breed River, there's abstraction for irrigation use, why must the national, that's a counter argument, why must the national taxpayer get involved in controlling that all the farmers get their rightful use? They're checking their permits, they're checking their abstraction.
Why must you do it? Because the law tells you to do it, and you must be able to come and account to us that it's done correctly. Imagine if you give farmers the role, and the farmers must go and decide whether they're abstracting and what rights they should have. I mean, what are we going to have? This is not government running it. This is the farmers running the show.
The rationale was that people at local level should basically, just as we've got local municipalities, that people at that local level will be best equipped.
Yes, but that's not answering the question. That local level can be people from the department. You're not answering why you have to create a new agency to do that at a local level. But, and why you have to create 19 of them?
You see, on the 19, I can answer you, the department's also got these jobs. We are currently looking at half of that to reduce the number.
No, don't do the numbers. Forget the numbers. Give the rationale to
me. But we agree with you on the number. We agree with you on a number, we should reduce.
Why the rationale? Forget the number. Tell me the rationale.
The rationale is if people at that catchment level, if they want to do their own management, they should pay for it, they should manage it themselves. It's a decentralization of powers.
People in civil society must run their
own affairs on water, and they must pay for it. Look, I mean, maybe there's a good answer to this, but I don't. You see, my problem is, I've got no problem with decentralizing. I've got no problem because that's the way things can work. But I've got huge problems if we are saying that it's the private sector that is going to do these tasks on behalf of government. Yeah, but it's the farmers. Who the hell is the farmers other than the private sector?
Okay, it's not the private sector. The board of the CMA is a representative of various sectors.
Why do you need a board, Toko? Why do you need another board? 5, 10, 15, 19. Why do we need to create all those boards we're creating? We've got boards everywhere. I mean, you know what I'm going to do? One of the tasks I want from you is you take every structure in this department, and I want you to give me all the names of every board and all the names and how many officials is in each one. I want to show you how this thing works. I want to show you. I don't know who came up with these great ideas, but to create boards to do these things on the basis that we think we're giving power to locals. There's a lot of answers to that. Why don't we give those powers and delegate them to municipalities? Why don't we do that? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but I'm just saying that's a very logical answer. If you're now asking about whether we have representative government doing these things and so on, the only answer I've got here is now is that we're giving it to the local people so that they can then pay for those regulations. I mean, yes, sir. Who are you? Who is he?
My name is Rashid Khan, manager of Western Cape Province for the Department of Water Affairs.
Good
morning, Chair, and others. Can I just attempt to please just probably say it in another way?
Stories, I want the Russian now for agencies.
The reason is the Department of Water Affairs don't want to do water resource management within a water management area. Full stop.
Why not? The Constitution gave them that power.
Yes. And the Constitution also gave the power to the National Department via the National Water Act to create institutions to do the job.
No, the Constitution didn't do that. Don't talk nonsense. Where in the Constitution does it say that?
The Constitution has given the mandate to the Department of Water Affairs.
No, the President has given the mandate to the Department of Water, not the Constitution. The President is the recipient of all executive power. The President creates ministries, and the President then decides and so on. It's not the Constitution.
Thank you, sir. The President has given the mandate to the Department of Water Affairs, and the Department of Water Affairs, via the National Water Act, has exercised its mandate to create institutions, and the Department of Water Affairs don't want to do water resource management.
If you want to give me a lecture and you want to talk rubbish, then that is not an answer that I've asked you. I said, concentrate and tell me why it must be an agency. You're not telling me. You're talking all other things. So if you want to talk and you want to raise these issues, please, I'm asking these things very seriously. I want to know from the department. You're clearly not answering the things anyway in the way it should be answered. Everyone knows that there's an act and there's a law and so on, and these things are there. The question is simple for the department. Why do we create more agencies to fulfill the task of the department, and we then scale down the department and create all these boards and all these things that are costly, that are huge to run? That is the simple question I am asking. If we don't have an answer to it, then we just say we don't have an answer to it. I don't want to listen to long stories about lectures about what the law... I mean, I know what the law says. But that is not the answer to the question. So you can't give me anything more than you've given me on the rationale for agencies instead of a unit of the department doing it or it being delegated to another part of government. You don't know any... Go give me a rationale for that. All right. Well, it answers a lot of things to me. And, you know, the first thing I answered when I saw there was only two agencies, the first question I asked myself, why are there only two? And the reason is because you don't need them. Simple. It's a simple thing. There can't be any other reason. Mr. Morgan?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for your line of questioning. One of the things I haven't heard the department say, and this is part of my understanding of CMAs, is that these designated 19 areas, of which you say, in your opinion, you might close them down, are actually based on some degree of science, in the sense that I mean, you have yet to actually define for us what a catchment is in terms of water. Because a catchment is a particular watershed where a certain amount, you know, water falls from the earth or comes from the springs or whatever, and then is contained in that catchment, you know, and possibly there's some transfer as well. So I'm surprised that you haven't even attempted to define it in terms of the science of a catchment, because I would imagine one of the problems is that you have 9 regional offices which are attached to political boundaries, when in fact water management doesn't subscribe to water, to political boundaries at all. It has its own boundaries according to the way over millions of years South Africa was created through various, you know, geological events, so to speak. And is this not then, what I'm pushing you on then, is because you've alluded to the fact of scaling down regional offices, there is no provincial function for water anyway. You have merely tacked onto the political boundaries regional offices, when in fact, actually, if there is to be regionalization of the Department of Water, it shouldn't be attached to provinces, it should be attached to catchment management agencies. What I'm trying to get at, and perhaps I'm trying to help, Chairperson.
It makes a lot of sense with you.
What I'm trying to help with is it a case of transitioning from the fact that you had no choice but to have regional offices into science-based regional entities? And I mean, the chair obviously is pushing you on the issue of why the need. What I'm trying to say is this a case of transitioning? Because I see zero need for a provincial office when it's not a provincial function, and it isn't. This is a national department. There's no point. It's an artificial boundary, quite frankly, for a national department. I get it with education, because education is a function of a provincial government. So, of course, you'd work along a political boundary, and similarly for health or social development. But it's not for water. So in that sense, the Constitution gave you 9 provinces. You don't need 9 provinces. You need a better entity. Have I in any way hit on something here? And then could you actually defend your view in the context of that?
I think it's a good explanation in terms of the need of how you get the boundaries. But clearly, I mean, that need, what that would entail is to transform the regional offices into structures that conform more with what we find in nature. It doesn't give any rationale for the agency. You have to be created for them. Okay, so let's, all right, Ms. Kosana.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, I should think as a portfolio committee, we need to get a chronogram of these regional offices, because we only know the directors of the regional offices. Hence, there are these agencies that we're talking about. Can we get the chronogram of these structures so that we can see and check whether can we be able to execute this issue of water at the regional level, at department or not? I should think that's where we should.
Yeah, we can get there.
Thank you.
All right, let's leave the rationale for now, because I can see. I think Mr. Morgan has pointed us in a direction which will give the rationale to relook the restructuring of the department, which I think what he's making is a very, very valid point. Because then you would be operating exactly like you would want to, that the department itself will be fulfilling those functions. You don't delegate, create boards and so on then to do that stuff. The department actually runs the show. You don't have to have extra layers of structures that exist. But that's for another debate. I mean, if you want to come later back on the issue why we need it in the form of an agency, I'll let you think about that. Let's go on with the input, bearing in mind what Mr. Morgan has said. Okay, and remember what Baba has said about wanting a breakdown of the regional structure that we can understand where it's situated, how many staff are there, etc., etc. All right, and then just to get it clear, where there isn't a catchment agency now, the department fulfills the function. Okay, well, that's just, you see, all the answers are there. I mean, they're just simple.
Thank you.
Someone has come up with this great scheme. The salaries, let me know up front, the salaries that the catchment area people get is the same as a civil servant created extra boards and that and extra layers of staff. Okay, all right. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. And, yeah. I think I'm on the reasons for the delays in the establishment of catchment management agencies. Chair, I think the first thing was that this was new in South Africa. And the first one was created around 2004. So it has been a learning curve. This is why we have delayed the establishment of the new one. There has also been capacity issues, internal capacity issues around overseeing the establishment process. There is also, we undermined the startup cost of the catchment agencies, and also we delayed in the delegation and transfer of functions to them. I think though all those issues indicate that we were learning, I think, since 2004. And I think the last bullet talk about the institutional realignment.
Thank goodness you're slow learning, that's all I can say.
Okay, we are getting there, we will get there. In 2007, Chair, we then launched a project that was re-looking and rethinking the whole issue of the 19 catchment management agencies. And that
Where's that project?
Chair,
has it been done?
It is still. We are still busy with it. It will be coming to you.
Who's doing it? Who's given the task? The people in the department.
Yes, with the support, technical support. If not us, then we have technical support from external technical support. Yes.
You now, if you only got X amount of chief directors, you only got X amount of directors, you only got X amount of deputy directors. If you can get this approved, you'll now have at those different levels many, many more of those. But okay, go ahead. It's interesting to hear.
Okay.
So when is that project supposed to be finished? What's the deadline?
It will be coming to you with the National Water Resource Strategy within, when they come to present to you. I think it's...
That deadline was August.
Okay.
July, August.
Okay.
I hope you get that work done quickly because July, August is very soon.
Okay. So I think that thinking, I think Herhard has already alluded to the issue that the 19 catchment management agents were too many, and now we have reconfigured them to 9 catchment management agencies.
Nine provinces, 9 CMAs. Well,
no, not according to the provincial boundaries. I think Honorable Morgan has helped us there. Okay. Chair, I think if you look at the 19, that was the original map, which is based on the water management areas. And this is what Honorable Morgan was explaining, that the initially we had 19 water management areas, which are based on the science of water and also the water management. And from those 19 water management areas, the intention was to establish 19 catchment management agencies. But now with the new thinking, we are moving...
But tell me in reality, in the way that Mr. Morgan spoke, I mean in real terms, without now trying to fabricate jobs and things, in real terms, how many real catchment areas are there in South Africa? I mean, in real terms...
We have 19 water management areas. And
no, I'm not asking that question. I'm asking a catchment area, as I understand, is an area that on itself collects certain amounts of water and it goes in a certain direction. You know, on the other side of the mountain, the water will go in another direction. So how many real catchment areas are there? I mean, you decided there were 19. You now want to bring it down to 9. And I don't know what those decisions are. Were they for political... other than natural reasons? I'm trying to work out, I mean, if we were honest about too with ourselves, if we had to really create structures to duplicate the catchment areas, forget what type of structure it is,
But how many real catchment areas will there be?
Can I offer?
Yes.
It depends on the scientific definition, whether you say there are sub-catchments. Take, for example, the wall. On the 19, we had and the orange. On the original thing, we had the upper orange and the lower orange. But in the orange, there are also sub-catchments, like tributaries coming into the orange. So you can say every river has got its sub-catchment, but it becomes part of a bigger catchment.
And I'm thinking of the bigger catchment.
The bigger
catchment,
we had the 19 as logical.
19 big catchment areas.
Big catchment areas, as shown on that map, yes.
And the scientist agrees with that there's 19, like big catchment areas. Okay, now that's my question, so then I at least know what I'm working with. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. Oh, that slide is not. So this is the future chair of the proposed consolidation and reconfiguration from the 19 to the 9. Just at that slide, yeah.
No, let me first have a look at it.
Yes. I think it's...
So those two, 1 and 3 are put together, 2 and 4 are put
together.
1
is together, yes. Orange is together.
8, 9, and 10 are put together. They haven't included Swaziland and Lesotho in South Africa. I see they haven't got numbers. 7 and 11 are together. 6 and 5 are together. 12 and 15, 16 and 18, 17 and 19. Okay. Everyone seen it?
So, Chair, I think I want to touch on the issue because this future picture indicates that there is going to be a change in the way the regional offices are structured and they are functioning. Because if you want the regional office to oversee one catchment, you will need one to oversee the entire VAAL, which is from the Gauteng up to the Northern Cape. So I think this is why we are saying there are implications in the way that the regional offices will also be reconfigured. But that is part of the future planning.
The issue that the department simply asks itself, let's say you reconfigure into 9, like it is here,
yes.
Or 19, doesn't matter. The issue is just, does one create a cumbersome bureaucracy of boards and CEOs and God knows what else, or do you create for each one of those areas where you have a regional office, you still have the regional office with the chief director, the head or the deputy or whatever, and then you fulfill the functions straight in the department just to a lower level? That's the issue you have to answer yourself. I mean, or do we create this structured thing with many layers of people and so on, when all of them are in any case civil service? All that we've now created is to create boards that are part of this thing and are creating another federal level. Or do you actually say to yourself, let us convince this committee, the treasury and so on, that for each of the catchment areas, whatever we have, 9 or 19, do we start it with a chief director or director and let all the functions in that area get run by government? So then the delegations are not to some other boards and some agencies and stuff. It's within the department and within the officials, and you have your lines of authority. That's the question you have to ask yourself. Simple question. On the kind of premise that Mr. Morgan has stated. And when you do this, then it's instead of undoing the regional offices, the issue is where you reconfigure your regional offices to make your lines much clearer and accountable to the minister, that there's clear lines of accountability, and we don't have all these levels of accountability that we create. You know, the other thing it does, it doubles your work. Because instead of giving instructions down to the department, having one audited statement done for the department, you now have, let's say there's 19, you have 19 audited statements done. 19 this, 19 that, 19 the other. You people have to oversee 19 entities now, separate entities, because they operate in a separate. Are they complying with the regulations, the norms and standards? Now you have to check all that stuff. Whereas in the department, it's clear your lines of accountability are much clearer. That's the issue we have to ask ourselves. Now, I'm not expressing a view one way or the other yet, although you know where my leaning is towards. I'm very happy for us to do that. But that's the debate we have to have. The debate's not how we divide it. The debate is how we function it. And the kind of thinking that Mr. Morgan's got, it just makes so much sense to me. That you don't think in terms of politically how you're going to divide this thing. You think of in terms of how is nature, what has nature given us? So how is the best way for us to government to run what nature has given us as a catchment? That makes much more sense than creating regional structures or whatever, whatever. But that's the kind of thinking we have to think of, okay? So I think what we, I mean, it's just starting to become very clear to me where our thinking has to be and so on. It may still be, for those of you that are worried about job creation, it may still be that for you to run those structures, that the regional component of the department is not what it should be, and one may have to look at it and debate it, particularly in terms of levels of importance, not importance, levels of control. What kind of person at what level do we say should be able to look at things like the use and so on and licenses, etc. That's the kind of person you may want to then create for that area. And it may then be that one has to reconfigure and look at it, and there may have to be more chief directors or more directors. You know, that can all be debated. Those are details we have to look at. But the first question we have to really ask ourselves, are we doing ourselves any justice by creating these layers of structures that we have, okay? All right, let's go on. Mr. Alpha?
Chair, thanks for those comments. Can I respond by saying currently we've got the Act, these CMAs are in the Act, so we are applying the Act, but we have also started on a legislative review, and what you are raising in this committee is touching the fundamentals of the current legislation. So it actually means we have to take this also into account when we review legislation.
You guys, and we know how long have we been in government? I say we as, I mean all of us, opposition, all of us. Most of us have only learned about government in the last 17 years. It's very good after 17 years for us to be able to sit down and review. I mean, but all the comments I've made now, people obviously with logic, kind of logically thought what they think are the right things, and they put it in policies and so on. That's the government's policies and so on. That's why I say I don't need a lecture on those type of things. The rationale of it is what I'm looking for. And it may now be time for us to look at the department, at the rationale, and say, when we said we wanted these structures, were they right ones? We've looked at it, yes, they were right, so let's create them. No, they weren't, so, you know, we're going to... Then if we do those kind of things in the review, then this time if we say, so we must commit ourselves to whatever we do. If we say it's CMAs we agree to, then we must create them and get rid of the regional structure. If it's new reconfigured regional structures we need in terms of Mr. Moore, then we must do that. So you're quite right, Alcott. The review gives us the perfect opportunity to relook all those issues. And we should be, you see, the problem, and that's why I asked earlier who does it. Because the problem is the DNA of the department thinks in a certain way. That's its DNA. Water department has got a certain DNA. Its DNA is what it's been, what it's become over, I don't know how long the department has existed, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 100 years, whatever it is. And the DNA in the department will think in a certain way. And part of that way is, how do you create new opportunities for people for job creation and so on? And I'm saying this in a nice way, not in an ugly way. It may well be that we need that capacity, that we don't have the capacity, that we've not grown in the 19 years that we should have grown, and that they're all the kind of restrictions we're talking about. But it's not, people need to sit down honestly and say, what is the best way of working? And I must tell you, I've now in my 17 years in government, the one thing I've learned is to start creating layers of structures in a department. It absolutely obfuscates problems and doesn't decrease the problem. The mere fact that you move the problem away from where you are in the regional offices and you move it into some catchment agency, you saw when the water boards came and reported. The ones that are rich can afford people big salaries and they can run the things properly. The ones that are not rich, they can't run it properly, they get whatever they can get. And we have the problems. Where are those problems? Usually in the poor areas, the old Bantustan and so on. So what we're doing is we're replicating the legacy of apartheid in the way that we work. It may be noble what we're trying to achieve, but what we're doing is we're replicating the kind of problems that exist. And that is why the Water Affairs Department will always have an area of excellence. it will be Rand Water Board, Mgeni, those will always be good, they'll have a lot of money and so on, but there's a huge part of the country that's always going to have problems. And the reason for that is that we move the stuff into agencies that then don't have the power that a minister has to move resources and so on. They just then sit and work in their little world, and they entrench the problems of their little world, are entrenched in it. Whereas you as a department now with this review has got an opportunity to relook at things. And I think that really, I hope that we've recorded what Mr. Morgan said, because that's the kind of thinking we need. In a new way of thinking in a department, when you think like that, you start working differently. Because a water catchment area in the Karoo, this whole desert here, I mean, clearly, that desert is not going to have too many catchment of water. I mean, the only waters are going to be under the ground probably. You know, so you may need a very small component of staff to be able to do the kind of things that the department has to do in that area, etc. Whereas in the Gauteng, there's a lot, you know, there are a lot of issues, a lot of water. Your component may be a bigger component, your CMA. If it's an agency or if it's a unit of the department, it may have a very, very big component to it. That's the way we must be thinking about these things. How many staff members do we need in whatever amount of areas we agree to actually provide the services for water in that area? We've been 17 years in the government. We've got no more excuses to say that we don't know. We should know. We should know. We should know that in this area, there are 50 licenses that get processed a year. There are 50 that get processed, 40 that, 30 that. How much is the average that our staff do these things, and therefore we can work out what component we need for? That's how you work these things out scientifically, or closer to being scientific. Makes much more sense. Then you get the department running these shows, not all these extra layers, which you then have to oversee, by the way, and have to come and give input here about other agencies that have, because you're not doing it yourself. Okay. All right. Anything else to talk for?
I think I will quickly go through our oversight role that the current two CMAs chair, we do provide strong oversight in terms of Schedule 4 of the National Water Act. They submit the business plan to us on an annual basis, and that business plan is analyzed and submitted to the minister. I think the Helhart has also touched on the issue of the catchment management strategy, which is aligned to the National Water Resource Strategy, which guides how the CMA is going to do its business in a water management area. Also, I think in terms of compliance with various issues, they submit the annual report and audited financial statements, which they will be presenting today.
Where do they get their budget from?
Okay, I'm coming to that. Okay. I think currently they are receiving grant income from the department through National Treasury. So, but in the future...
But no other external funding?
Not yet. But they can fundraise for themselves. But in the future, they will be generating income from the water users in their own area of operation.
So they'll be able to tax and create levies in their areas.
In line,
thinking for the future.
In line with the pricing strategy.
Yeah, okay. All right, just go on, go on, go on.
Okay. I think the chairpersons and chief executives of the
looks
two...
Looks to me like in the end, this department, the single thing that you'll be doing is just setting tariffs. And you want an independent regulator, so you'll even give that job away. So the rest of you will now just be sitting there doing nothing, just doing oversight. I mean, you've now given away the whole department. You're on the way to give it away. I mean, we're now even going to allow these agencies to start collecting money and... What is the next issue?
Because the money currently goes to a national pool. Remember the water trading entity? And we believe it will be done well at a regional level. And I think, Chair, they will be going through their financial statements They did very well since their establishment. They have never got a qualified audit, and there have not been bonuses, and they did not pay for World Cup tickets. So I think for now, we are fine.
Okay, that's the rationale for existing. They've got an unqualified report, they haven't taken World Cup tickets, and they don't pay bonuses. You've pressed all the right buttons. Well done, Mr. Kwan. You've pressed all the right buttons.
Yeah, they. I think, Chair, they also contribute to the government objectives in terms of employment.
They do indeed.
Yes.
They do. As far as employment comes, they really they comply with government's priorities. Eh?
And also in rural development, I think it makes sense for an agency that is closer to the people if we want to contribute towards rural development in the country. They work closely with local government.
You have so little faith in your department, you know. When you talk like this, you've got so little faith in your department. It's actually embarrassing how little faith the department's got in itself. We're going to create this agency because they're much closer and they can speak to the people.
Oh, my God. I'm getting it all wrong today, Jay. I apologize.
I'm serious. What is government other than complying and fulfilling the needs of its people, being close to us? If we're not those things, that's why we get service delivery marches and da-da-da and da-da-da and da-da. That's why. Because we start becoming departments that are overseeing and oversight, and someone else who is not accountable to anyone, who has no political mandate to fulfill, are the ones that then are the ones communicating with our people, with whatever party it is communicating with the people. So I think, you know, just in your input, you know, that there's so many assumptions that is in the input that... that you can see, and as I say, I don't expect any other input, because that's the DNA of the department. That's the way it thinks, it's the way it operates, like that. That's why it is. And we have a chance to reconfigure the DNA with a review. Mr. Morgan?
Thanks, Chair, for letting me make a comment now. I know the presentation isn't finished, but like you, I'm also trying to frame my thoughts on this. I need you to give us reasons why. Okay, let's state what we know. We know that 19 was the original aim, that 2 are functional, that your desire is to drop it to 9. Now, what were the reasons? I know you've given us some reasons there, and you said capacity. What were the reasons that the others were not started? Because what I need to know is why weren't those problems, the reasons they were not started, simply transfer themselves into even the new configuration of less CMAs? Because when you look at the CMA and a change in size, we're looking at a change in size. Now, is it economies of scale? Is you know, do you feel that the available capacity, and I think we're probably talking about human resources, is better available over these bigger areas? I mean, it's almost counterintuitive if that is the case. Because if you were going to empower communities, and if you want real empowerment, you need everyone to be empowered. You can't have a few strong men in an area dominating an even bigger geographic size. I mean, if we accept the concept of people making decisions about how they use water, everyone has to be empowered. So that's why I'm saying, why should we believe that now it would work better than before, quite frankly? I think it's I think that's something that the department has the burden to justify to us. I think it will be very interesting to get the full reports from the 2 established ones to see why they, as you say, work. I mean, you've ticked off a few governance issues. The other thing, of course, and I think it is relevant to the department's comments on this, is, and I have Buyisa Ebag in mind when I make this comment, because you have boards and you bring users together, and I like the idea of that intuitively, I really do, and I want to see it work. But to what effect do catchment agencies institutionalize conflicts between users? Because I accept that users have to talk. I accept that it's give and take, and I accept that in South Africa, in the current South Africa chair, there has to be a change in the way water is used. I suspect there are large parts of South Africa where certain groups of people have better access to water than others, and we have to transform our country for the betterment of all South Africans. But to what extent does the concept of the agency, where it's supposed to empower all users and allow them to come up with optimal solutions, actually institutionalize conflict? Because there are different types of users. There's big agriculture, small agriculture, industry, human consumption, ecological reserve, and all of those things. And this is the point then, because of course if you have institutionalized conflict, do you get the best outcomes? I mean, is it just the case that if you fight, somehow everyone comes up with the best solution? It's possible, I guess. I mean, I'm sure economists would say that in an ideal world is exactly right. I'm not sure if that is always possible in South Africa, which suffers from the asymmetry of power between different groups, quite frankly. And that goes back to my first part. Some people are inherently more powerful in South Africa because of the legacy of our past, because of the opportunities that they have had, because of large capital behind them. So I really need you to talk us through. I must say, I intuitively like the idea of catchment management agencies. I really do. But I know the chairperson often has this view, is, you know, government must not abrogate its role of governing, quite frankly. And where there is institutionalized conflict, there has to be an arbitrator.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that is government. So in an ideal world, I would love the conflict to come out with the ideal solution that is fair and is transformative in nature, because we have to transform water use in country to benefit all South Africans. But we can't have institutions that are hamstrung by a lack of conflict, asymmetry of power, and then there isn't any government oversight of that. If I truly believe in a perfect world, that this was a perfect world and we could do all of those things, I might say, well, whatever, government, we don't need that. We don't need the governing institution. But this is South Africa, and we're dealing with power, and we're dealing with legacy, and we're dealing with all sorts of other things which matter.
Any responses?
I will try.
I think that's a lot, again, like the other inputs, a lot of there is some good guidance there in terms of the kind of principles we should be looking at.
Yes. Chair, you know, the nature of water resource management is very local. It requires a local context. Because when you deal with water resource management issues, it's small issues. You find that it's two people fighting over one who has diverted the river. And you get those issues being escalated to a regional or a national level. It is difficult for a national level to deal with the local
issues. You see, when you talk, you just say all the wrong things.
Oh,
I mean, why is government there other than to sort that out? How are you going to allow the people at the local level to sort out their fights? Exactly, you mean you what Mr. Morgan's saying. Your institutional structures you're creating, many of yours, and environment, your intentions are good, but when you implement those things, you are absolutely entrenching conflict in the structure. So you're saying there's a conflict in Kumati between farmers, they're diverting the river and so on. Usually, this is such a serious matter, you actually go to court to resolve it. I mean, that's how serious it is. I mean, if you get a farm, you divert a river. It's not maga-maga. What do you guys say is the solution? You create a local structure to get those people and you try and solve it there. Now, there's nothing wrong. If the department thought that, but you guys think of, no, we can't escalate this higher because it's difficult issues, how do we deal with it? That's a complete wrong attitude. What you rather should be doing is how you strengthen your structures locally. You create different forms, mediation, arbitration. Those are the kind of things you create down at that level to do it. But you guys do it and you start moving it to other structures. And, you know, and
as I say, it's your DNA. I mean, when you talk Toko every time, you fall into the exactly what you guys are doing. And when you say to me that the reason is these guys are fighting down there, we don't.
It's terrible to deal with that up here. We don't deal with these things. I mean, yeah, we are regional and national. We don't deal with this petty squabbles down.
These are bloody things that create wars, my dear. Water creates wars. And it's government's responsibility to sort it out. Not to say to the locals, you sort it out. The locals, you know how they sort it out. I'll see you behind the barn. And they shoot it out. That's how they shoot it out. There's always been frontier wars on water. They've always been like it. So we must look at this thing much more institutionally correctly, how we deal with it. The last thing we can say is, oh, these petty squabbles on water down there, people diverting rivers, stealing water, you know, let them sort it out that level. No! No! The department must be involved and sort these things out. You're the only one that can be a relatively balanced arbitrator and not internalize that conflict as Mr. Morgan is explaining, which is correct. So you know what I think I must do? I mustn't let you talk anymore. Unless there's something that you haven't told us, let's listen to these management agencies and see what they're doing at the moment. And then maybe we can come back to you. And then, yeah, okay, let's leave it like that. Which one is Nkumadi and which one is Breda River? Let me see who you are and I'll say. Who's that? Breda? Nkumadi? Nkumadi there. Okay, you've got a woman, Nkumadi, so I think you must be first if you've got a woman. Oh, you also got a woman. I didn't see your hand. All right, so you both got a woman. All right, toss a coin. The chairperson. Okay, let's start with Nkumadi.
Chair, can we just respond to Mr. Morgan's question before, while they're sitting up?
I hope you rather you listen to it, because I thought he spoke a lot of sense, but if you want to respond to it, it's fine.
No, what Toko was trying to say, these local issues can be, should either be solved at local level, but obviously Section 87 of the National Water Act provides for the minister to intervene. Of course, if this can't be solved at local level, I can always come to the minister and to the department. I also want to allow my colleague advocate to just give inputs on what the minister is currently trying to do in terms of business reengineering.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. First of all, I would really like to thank the portfolio committee for the fruit of thought that they have given us. I think as a department, we need to go back to our drawing board. And also that this is also an opportune time for us, as we also are currently dealing with the legislative review, to say that the current laws that we have, are they helping us to implement properly, or are there impediments in terms of carrying out our mandate as a department? And obviously today it has really shown that as much as the department is trying to be in compliance with the Act, but certainly there has been some impediment that we need to work on. Secondly, that we also need to acknowledge the leadership that our current minister, the Honorable Minister Mulewa, is giving to the department, and that as a result, she's in the process of establishing the business re-engineering process. That is going to look into the whole issue of, is the department functioning optimally, what are the problems, how we can deal with it. And I think that it's going to be a process that is going to be incremental in its nature, and that we will, as we go along, as they make recommendations, we'll try and implement those recommendations. And obviously that we'll take on board the issues that have also been raised by the portfolio committee, especially during even the budget review. And that will help us to function better as the department. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I was trying to avoid letting you speak because I didn't want to put you in difficulties at this stage. I want this department to justify what it is. But looking at the whole structure. The problem is when we get inputs here, we hear Schedule 3 has been handed over to this. You know, so what is happening in the process, on the one hand, we're going to relook everything. On the other hand, we're going ahead. And as you say, we keep on implementing the legislation. Instead of, you see, if we say we're having a review and we're hoping July or August to come up with a review, we should be careful not to be implementing stuff. I mean, the whole Schedule 3 has now been given to the management agencies to start implementing away from the department. You can see what my problems is. So that is why I welcome your words. I was hoping not to, well, I was trying to avoid from the minister's office having to give any inputs, because I know that there are processes busy, and I don't want to undermine those processes. But I want the department particularly to think, because it's the department that advises the minister. And the department needs to think a lot of it. That's why we raise these things here. Anything we say here, unless we pass it as a report, that this is what we say, it's not necessarily a position of this parliament committee that we send to the minister. All these things are we engaging with you at the moment. Exactly. I want the department to think about what they, even when they give their input, the assumptions they make, to question the assumptions, because behind those assumptions lies a whole lot of things which Mr. Morgan has outlined. So I really thank you for those comments. I think they're very positive, and that is the way I look at the picture. But my only worry, as I say, is in the meantime, things are going on that is running counter to a process of review. Because if you're reviewing it and you're checking if you're doing the right things, to keep on implementing and giving powers away to the agency at this stage is just counterproductive. Because then later you have to undo all that stuff. In the meantime, these poor agencies have to now get the money, and they have to get the staff, they have to get everything to implement that stuff, and then later on if we decide this is not necessarily the right way to go, then we have to try and reverse that. So rather, if there is a review going on, let's try and stop these things unless they're absolutely necessary, which I don't think they are, but if they are, you know, there could be a justification. Okay. That's good. Everyone happy? I can see you all happy. Lovely. I think that's happy. Akhar is unhappy. Uncle Marty? Your input?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and MPs, ladies and gentlemen. We are here presenting our annual report for 2009-2010 financial year from the Nkomati Cabinet Management Agency, and myself, I'm Patience Nyakan Maluka, and I'm the chairperson of the governing board of Nkomati. Maybe chairperson, having listened to your comments earlier on, I would like to say that perhaps if you are indeed considering going down to Bushbuckridge Water Board, perhaps it would also assist us if you could also visit Nkomati, because our offices are near each other, the Bushbuckridge Water Board as well as the Nkomati. Our presentation, firstly, I'd like to say that
that's fine.
Is it better now?
That's a bit better.
All right. Thanks. What I wanted to say is, I think you heard me when I said that I would like to...
Sure.
Yeah, if you come down, please do come to us as well. We would really appreciate that. But then coming back to the presentation itself, the first thing is that as Nkomati, having been established in 2005 in September, ever since then we tried our best to follow all the legislation, and we are also reporting in terms of the Chapter 7 of the National Water Act. We always report to Parliament our strategic plan, our operational plan annually and quarterly as well, the financials, and also the performance
Just hang on a sec, madam. Just hang on. What's it? Looks like this.
Chair, if I just may comment quickly, we've just moved the first two slides, which were these two, and put the governing board issues before them, because our chairperson.
You just moved the slides around.
Just so that
the document is right, they just moved the slides around a bit. So you may
just to allow our chairperson to introduce me, and I'll carry on.
Just bounce around a bit. Look here. That one is called governing board performance.
There are two presentations, so you might be looking at the strategic plan, and then there's this one, the annual report. Present the strategic plan after this one, which is the annual report.
Strategic plan and annual report.
Yeah, there's two separate presentations.
So here's the annual report. Oh, the annual report one looks like this. Have you got it? Okay, lovely. Thank you, ma'am. Sorry for interrupting.
No problem, you're welcome. And Chairperson, I forgot to mention that I'm not the only one from ECOMAT. I'm with our acting chief executive, Brian Jackson, as well as our executive manager, corporate and finance, Ms. Cynthia Nkulu. Thanks. Yeah, earlier on, what I was indicating is that we did our best to comply with the legislation in terms of reporting, in terms of our performance as well as our financials, both quarterly as well as annually. And as indicated by Madam Togos Gwaza, it is true that ever since our establishment, we have had unqualified audit opinions. And also,
how many board members do you have?
Initially, we were 14 in number.
14?
Yes, because we've got representatives from different sectors. Unfortunately, from the 14, one was representing the government of Limpopo. But ever since the new boundaries, when Bushbuckridge went back to Mpumalanga, that one was removed from the board. But also, we unfortunately had several deaths in the board. All in all, we have lost about two members.
But the size is 14, usually.
Yes, and we also had two board members who vacated in terms of the legislation because they were not attending meetings properly. So for now, I think we are left with only 8 members.
And what powers has the board got in terms of to what extent can you interfere with management or give directions or whatever?
The whole strategic direction of management is coming from the board. Like when we go for the strategic planning of the institution, that is directed by the board itself. And the powers are actually the normal powers of other boards, like the appointment of the chief executive, as well as the reporting of the chief executive to the board.
How often do you meet?
I was coming to that one, Honorable Chair. But normally, in terms of the legislation, we are required to meet not less than 4 times in the year. But you will also understand when you look at our meetings, all in all, including our committees, when you put them together for the financial year under review, we met 28 times. The reason being that we were the first one to be established. And we had a lot of challenges including policy development. So that is the reason why we're making more of it. But in terms of the law, we're supposed to use it.
Do you have committees?
Yes, we do have.
People belong to committees as well?
Yes, the 28 includes the committees. The first one is the executive committee, which is actually looking at the corporate part of the institution, and it has got members. It's chaired by myself as the chairperson of the governing board. And we also have the water committee, which is mostly looking at the technical part, and it was chaired by the deputy chairperson of the governing board, who is an engineer. And we also have the audit committee in terms of complying with the Public Finance Management Act, which has got three outside members. One has resigned, and two members of the board. So we're left with four members in the audit committee.
And what remuneration is there for board members?
The remuneration differs. Brian Jackson will touch much on the...
We'll leave you, okay. So we can get that just for what you can get paid.
Yes,
all
it's right. A city, of course. And it differs from the chairperson,
the chairperson,
and to the other members. But he'll deal much on the figure when we come to talk to the financial.
How much, you said there's 28, I mean, how much time of that, is that 28 days that gets taken up, or these half days, or what are they?
It depends on the hours. If we are meeting less than 3 hours, we only pay for the hours.
And then I'm not thinking about payment at this stage, I'm just trying to work out how much time do you spend on work of the board?
Well, sometimes we do work from 9 until maybe 4 o'clock. It depends on the workload of that particular day.
And these committees, do they take decisions, or is it the board that takes decisions?
The board takes decisions, but there are some other areas where the committees have got powers, but most of the decisions are being taken by the board itself. Mostly the committees only meet in order to look at the issues thoroughly and investigate if necessary, then recommend to the board.
Okay, sorry, go on.
Thanks.
That gives me a clearer picture of what the board does. Thanks.
Thank you. And then amongst other policies and issues that we look at under this 2009-2010 financial year, we have developed the governing board charter that guides the board, and we also received the delegation of powers and functions by the governing board, and also the audit committee charter and terms of reference for both the executive as well as the water committee of the board. We also revised them during this financial year. And we also managed to review and also adopt other policies. All in all, there were 20 that we did for this financial year. And we also...
Kind of just... You know, I'm very ignorant. I am new. What kind of policies will you adopt? I mean, you say 20 policy documents. What kind of policies will you adopt?
The policies will start from your governing board charter to the usual policies like your human resource policy, policies like your traveling, your subsistence, all those kinds of policies.
Those are more internal processes.
Yes.
Are there any substantive policies that you pass?
Yes, we did.
On what?
On, like, your traveling policy, wherein, even before we were established, the department had already started some relationship with the Netherlands government in terms of training. So our traveling policy also covers that one for the training. And on the training arrangement, Brian Jackson will also talk about the achievement in terms of the training, because I believe we've made a reasonable stride deriving from the training between ourselves and the Hoogsalan, which is a water board in Netherlands.
Have you passed any policies on water issues, like water usage, licenses, management, any? Have you passed any policies like that?
Unfortunately, we could not move much on that one, simply because we're still waiting for the powers and functions that were delegated to us on the 17th of December last year. So it was not very much possible for us to move much on that one. But ever since the delegation, we are moving towards that direction.
Okay, you can go ahead.
But there is progress in terms of the relationship that we have with the irrigation board and the irrigation forum at a local level. And we also have a memorandum of understanding that are guiding such relationships.
Okay. Go ahead.
And we also created a corporate governance division in the institution. The main duty of this corporate governance division is to guide the board in terms of the law and also in terms of the implementation of board resolutions. We have appointed an advocate in this division as the board secretary. Although within the board itself, we are fortunate because we also have certain skills, like we have a senior counsel advocate, Wom Kastubre, who is a board member and is also coming from the commercial farming sector. So as an advocate, he's able to also assist. He just don't rely on the advocate of the board secretary, but we also piggyback on himself.
Yes, apparently he's been around for a very long time. He writes to me that he wasn't only involved in the previous Water Act, but the previous Water Act, which is going on long back. He seems to have a lot of experience.
He does. He's actually very much helpful because, time and again, he's able to assist in terms of what was happening during the time when the 1956 Water Act was in place. And we are able to compare between the current National Water Act as well as the previous one. And we are able to at least take what is best between the two. And we're very much instrumental also in terms of assisting the department when it comes to the review of the current legislation. The other area was the fact that when we went to Kenya 2 years ago, we managed to learn that they are using the act that they learned in South Africa. But then what they did was to put together the National Water Act and the Water Services Act into two, and it is working better for them, whereas they learned it in South Africa. So I think it goes together with the current debate which was debated earlier on this morning. We had a little backlog in the institution in terms of implementing board resolution before we appointed the board secretary. But then ever since we appointed him, we have a register of the board resolution in place, and we are able to track all the resolutions of the board in terms of how it's implemented fire management. As I mentioned earlier on, we've got, when we compiled this 2009-2010 annual report, we had 2 vacancies in the board, but currently we've got 4 vacancies in the board. And I must mention, Honorable Chairperson, that it's not very easy to work without other sectors being represented in the board. Like, I will just mention one, the other governing board member who passed away was representing the emerging farmers, and there are lots of challenges among the emerging farmers. So without such a representative in the board, it becomes very difficult. And the other one was also coming from SALGA. We had 2 representatives that were coming from SALGA. The other one was involved with the planning, and I was representing SALGA, but coming from water service.
Are there any disputes on the board? You have these people come from different interest groups representing their interests there. Are you taking substantive decisions? Is the work not these administrative things? That's easy. On the substantive issues, the thing that Ms. Sagwaza says, if there's disputes amongst water being deviated and so on, are you able to make decisions on the board?
We do make decisions, but fortunately, we are able to discuss and agree on issues. You agree with me that if people come representing different interests, it is very much normal that you differ, but the most important thing is that whenever we differ, we are able to reason and come together. And also, what we normally encourage is that we might be coming from different sectors representing different interests, but once we are appointed by the minister in the board, at the end of the day, we need to be able to find each other and be able to work each other. And it also helps, because before I came to the board myself, I was a councillor understanding local municipalities. But ever since I came to the board, I am able to understand the entire catchment, how we work with the emerging farmers, how we work with the environment, and also how we work with different...
Excuse others. My ignorance, but where, look, the things that Ms. Magwaza says, if there's a dispute, say about water being deviated or people using water incorrectly or whatever, where is that discussed and the decision taken? In management or in the board?
Management can start the discussion, but then sometimes it needs the decision of the board. Then it's taken to the board for decision making. But as I said earlier on, like in the case of Womkas with the commercial farm, if the dispute is coming from the maybe between 2 commercial farmers, it becomes very easy if you champion maybe a delegate, you leave the delegation to go and meet with them so that you are able to settle the dispute. And also the same if it's coming from emerging farmers, the same will apply. But up to so far, because we hadn't had those delegations yet, we didn't have such a dispute yet.
And the other decisions, I mean the other things, all the tasks you've given, are those decisions taken at the board level or at the management? I know management will process this, but do they take the decisions? Let's say it's on water usage, water management stuff and so on. Or do those decisions get escalated to the board?
For now, as I indicated, that we didn't have the delegations yet. But my understanding is that when it comes to water use for the board, that's a huge decision. It cannot just be taken at the management level. It will have to come to the board.
Those decisions will be taken at the board level.
Precisely. I don't see management really taking such decisions.
Then you're going to... Then it's difficult to see how the Act says you only meet 4 times a year.
It says at least
4 times.
Yeah, at least It should be 4 times a year.
Look, I apologize to ask you these questions. Just that this is all new to me, so I'm trying to work out how this thing, you know, I was trying to work out how it's been put together and where decisions are taken and so on. So I apologize for all the questions. Go ahead.
You're welcome. Thanks. And we're also, unfortunately, we are having an acting chief executive simply because the chief executive was appointed in 2006, had to resign simply because he was going to some other avenues. He was going into politics. So ever since then, we tried to replace. Most unfortunately, from the previous minister, we received a moratorium not to appoint the CEO simply because the appointment of a new board was due. But the thing is, ever since, now it's 2 years, we are without the chief executive. We are using our executive managers, like in the case of Mr. Brian Jackson, is our executive manager, water resource, planning and programs. So for him to act as chief executive and also executive duties, more especially now that we have received our delegation, it becomes difficult, such that the board in the previous meeting, where we met on the 27th of May, decided to take a resolution to go ahead, but also to inform the minister that it is difficult for us to operate, such that for now we'd like to go ahead and appoint a chief executive so that it can become easy for management to be able to operate. At this stage, those are the few challenges that we are facing. And before I hand over to Mr. Jackson, I would also like to talk to some other issues that are our achievements as an institution. The one comes from the tuning arrangement that we are having with the Dutch Buttercup Quad Salad. From that tuning arrangement, what happened is that there was a project with one school which looked at the sanitation. And from that sanitation project, it cascaded into a gardening, and it has been rolled out to some homes that are close to the school. It's a high school. But currently, that particular project has been rolled out, and we are in partnership with the Department of Education for Mpumalanga province. They are quite excited about it, and it has been rolled out to 10 schools. We are now calling it the Singobile 10 School Project. It's a coincidence. Singobile means we have one. So the first school, the name of the school is Singobile. And because we believe we have one, for the 10th school, we are calling it the Singobile 10th School Project. And on this note, Honorable Chair, I'd like to hand over to Brian Jackson to talk to the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair. Before I go on my presentation, I just wanted
to concentrate on the strategic plan.
I will try and
financial statements.
Keep the interest of time in mind.
We still have to take the other agency as well.
Because the first presentation is the 2019 annual report, and then I will present our strategic plan, our current strategic plan, which I hope will show that we have also progressed a lot in the last 2 years. And a lot has changed. Just in terms of the responsibility of the governing board is actually in the Act the responsible authority of the IC, of the Catchment Management Agency. And that implies that they take all decisions, but they can and do delegate a lot of the operational decisions to management. The chairperson was referring to when it comes to the water allocations and our water allocation plan that we have to do, that would not be delegated. It would be drafted by management and approved by a governing board, and then we would then operate under that sort of plan. So there is the final responsible authority is the governing board, but a lot of the operational day-to-day decisions on restrictions and releases and such are made by management.
But the big issues in terms of the act are going to be decided by the board.
Yes, that is the responsible authority. Okay, just quickly, this was the first business plan when we developed for this year that was done with a process called adaptive management developed in South Africa by the University of Witwatersrand. We involved them through a Water Research Commission project to assist us in developing our business plan for this year. So we reported on our annual report. It's a process that was specifically developed to enable good adaptive management of complex systems like water resources, which is not a simple thing. So we used that process and involved the university to come up with the main five objectives that are in the annual plan, quoted in our annual plan. I've presented them on the screen. They're basically nice statements. There's nothing specifically detailed going on there, but they are in the annual plan, and I'll put them on the presentation just for your information. We also developed a lot of other things through this adaptive process, the values, the attributes, the threats, and the constraints in the ICMA in water resources management. Those are all in the annual report, but I'm not showing them here. What I will concentrate on is the institutional performance, the main performance, and then I'll go on to the finances. Okay. It's already been reported that we met all our legislative reporting requirements, and we made a lot of strides on cooperative governance. During this year, we only had our initial functions, and they were centered around investigating and advising was the main initial functions that we had at the time, as well as development of our cash flow management strategy. Under the investigating and advising everybody in the area, we got very involved in a lot of forums and a lot of projects and research in our area, and I've basically listed them all on the slides. We've made forums for each of our main river catchments where we discuss on a bi-monthly basis the water resources issues. We attend Water Affairs forums and the Coordinating Committee on Agriculture Water, Wetlands Forum, an Irrigation Forum, a Joint Operations Forum of COBWA for the operations of the Swaziland and South African portion of Komati Basin, and we are members of WESA and the Global Water Partnership. There's also a lot of Water Research Commission projects assisting. One of them I've already mentioned is the Strategic Adaptive Management, but that's also looking at ecological systems, and we will have an MOA with the Kruger National Park regarding the gathering and sharing of information. I don't know how much detail you want, but there's a lot of projects there that are still on the go, and some of them are finished in terms of time. We're on there if we will.
You can go on.
Okay, and then there's also Water Affairs has a lot of projects themselves, mostly around the development of operating rules, which we are taking over with implementation of those. The verification of existing water use, all existing water users have to be verified before we can carry on with the allocation reform program. We're very involved there. And a strategy to develop.
What does that mean? What do you do? You have to verify the allocation. How do you go about it?
It's also part of the Act, but basically in the old Act, only people inside irrigation districts were actually managed, and everyone outside of an irrigation district, they could use certain amount of water, but they never required licensing. The new Act, everybody has to be authorized in terms of the new Act across the whole country. Groundwater was also not required, did not require authorization. So because of that, we had to register. All users had to be called for registration, which happened in 2000. And then after that, we had to go through a process of verifying that registration information for correctness. Do we agree how much they're actually using? So who is using what and where in our catchment, and how much is the total water use? That's the verification process. It's step one of a lot of steps to come to the final allocation reform where we reallocate water.
Okay.
And we also did a study with Water Affairs.
Sorry, let me just ask this. Is there a register somewhere of all the water that's been registered?
Yes. Water Affairs developed a system called WORMS, the Water Authorization and Registration Management System, where all water users are registered. The verification process is taking that information and basically correcting it where we find out through the project that the water use is incorrectly registered, and we find out that it's unlawful or lawful, the registration system gets updated. So there's a computer database basically called WORMS.
So what you're actually doing is you're checking and verifying that database.
Yes, but that database was created during the registration process where people were called to register their water use, but they but no verification was done at the time of the accuracy of that data.
Up till when does that register go?
Well, it's live. It's always continually updated.
Continually updated.
Yes. And if a license gets changed hands or changed around or a new license is issued, then it gets updated on the register as well. So it's live.
What have you put in place to avoid corruption? If I am a big user of water in your area, I may have very good reasons to give you a bribe to make sure that I get recorded very nice and positive things. What systems do you have in place to avoid corruption and so on? Because now remember, decentralized, you're doing it only in your little area. It's not a national thing that can be checked anymore.
Yeah, well, I would say there's probably two steps to that. We have our audits committee that also looks at everything we do for obviously not just the normal auditing issues, but also our operational functions and whether we're doing that correctly. We also have to report to Water Affairs on everything that we do, and they are our regulator. So they're also checking for corruption of what CMAs do and ensure that we are spending the money correctly and effectively and efficiently. So the main mechanism, I'd say, is that we are regulated by the departments.
But am I right to say that you now in control of that portion of the registry that falls within your area?
No, there's still split responsibilities because allocations and licenses are still done by Water Affairs themselves. It's not delegated to us. But we are delegated the verification of existing use. So we both have access to that database, and if we do a verification, we basically supply to Water Affairs to capture.
How many licenses are there in your area, for example? Or allocations, whatever you call it.
In the Inkomati,
the amount that you have to verify and check, how many of them are there?
In terms of water users, if you include all the water users covered by the irrigation boards as well, because there's a lot of users under them, we have approximately in the Inkomati 4,000 water users. But there's probably about 1,800 registrations because all the water users under irrigation boards are covered under one registration. But there's about 4,000 approximately water users in the area and about just under 2,000 registrations.
So how long have you been busy with the verification?
Well, we were, as a CMA, only delegated the functions officially in the 17th of December last year, 2010. It was the responsibility of Water Affairs before then. We're taking over the project. It's probably been going on for about 3 years, and we are going to...
They were busy verifying for 3 years.
Approximately.
How many have they verified of the 4,000?
I'd say, correctly verified, we're about 60 to 70% of the water users are done, so we're just finalizing the process at the CMA.
What's your target?
To finalize it, I think we have a 12 to 18 month time frame to completely finish it.
So we will only know 18 months from now in your little area of Nkomati whether we verified all the allocation. And they've been busy the department for 3 years already.
Yes. It was more complicated than it was assumed in the beginning.
What's the complication? I mean, you know, there's a register. People are in the register or they're not in the register. You then have to verify it. I'm trying to work out what the complication is.
Well, in the beginning, the assumption was made that we would use, that satellite imagery could be used and aerial photography could be used to try and make the interpretation. And it came down to the fact that you have to almost approach every single individual cadastral boundary or farm on an individual basis and look at them, where you could not just use assumptions. It's fine on a catchment basis when you want to have a general idea of the water use and use that for your modeling. But when you need to verify the lawfulness of a user, you have to go to farm level. And that was sort of not correctly understood. So the first sort of 2 years of the project,
why? Because
they did not have enough detailed information.
You can have 50,
whatever, and
you have to go and verify on the farm that they're only using
50. Yeah, because if someone starts using it illegally, you need to know exactly what they're allowed to use so that you can actually enforce your compliance. If you have only a basic idea, it becomes almost impossible legally to actually do compliance.
Again, excuse my ignorance. I imagine that when you give someone water, there's a meter.
No. There's some parts of the country have water meters. Some of our irrigation boards have water meters. Most of our municipalities have water meters. But a lot of water users are not meters in this country at the moment. So you have to calculate.
How do they check in the past then if the people are using the right amount?
Well, there's a lot of science behind it. It's that on land-based water use such as farming, it's easier where you can get the area under irrigation and you can have crop factors and you can do calculations on what kind of water that crop uses and you do estimations. But it's all calculations based on...
If there isn't a meter for them, how do they pay? How do you charge them?
They get an allocation, and that's an average annual water use. So it's calculated on a normal water year, how much they would require on a normal water year based on the crop type they have.
And that's a
flat rate.
Let's assume they allocated 4 kilowatts or whatever it's called, 3 kiloliters.
Yes.
How do you check that they only get 4?
Well, first of all, we charge them on that allocation, and they get paid on that every single year, whether they're using it or not. Checking it is easier if they've got a water meter, because we obviously get the water meters, and that's part of our strategic plan is to roll out water meters. And I think Water Fair also has part of that plan. But at the moment, you have to do a calculation based on...
But at the moment, that if they use more water than they were allocated, you don't know.
No, we do have... There are enforcement officers that go around. We're also very reliant on the neighbor, on people telling us that this person is doing, and then we investigate them. That is currently what we rely on a lot. We also have satellite images and aerial photographs that we use to try and see if they've expanded their lands. If we pick up changes in land use, we go and investigate.
Does this only apply to farmers? There are no other categories of this.
No. I'm talking as farming as an example, but obviously we have to look at all users.
Are there other users also without meters?
Most industries and most municipalities have water meters. There's a lot of small industrial users in out there that are not water metered and have an allocation, but most of them, the bigger ones, are metered. It's a situation that we have.
I'm absolutely shocked. I'm shocked in that situation. When you verify it now, do you put in meters as well when you verify it, or do you still not put in meters?
It's a separate parallel sort of program to expand the water meter coverage. It's not the same because it's going to take... Putting water use meters is very capital intensive and it's costs a lot of money, each of these meters. So where we need it, where we have stressed catchments, where we over allocated and we really need to do proper detailed management of the water use on a day-to-day basis, we're prioritizing putting water meters there. Where the catchments are not as stressed, and there's still room to maneuver, those are not the priority areas. We'll get to them later.
Would I be right to say you gave an allocation to a farm 20 years ago? Could that be possible?
Yes.
Could it be possible? Now, from 20 years ago, we charged them X for their allocation.
Yes.
It could be that they've used X plus 10, and we just don't charge it. They get it for free.
We would be able to pick up. There are a lot of ways and means other than water meters.
But I don't talk about gossip about the neighbors checking out the other farm and saying, well, I think their spray is on 10 times a week and so forth. I'm not talking about that. Is there any scientific way that if we've made allocations to people that we are able to see whether they're using more than they were allocated?
There are scientific ways of calculating it. But for land use, it's based on where you can pick up the area under irrigation. You can calculate pretty accurately a water
but
use.
But you wouldn't know
year.
Whether you
where
you
have non land
twice or three or four or five or six times. If you don't know that, and for how long you're irrigating and how much water the pipe will let out, you don't know that. It's just a guess.
It's a calculation, a scientifically based calculation.
That's not scientific.
Well, it is.
That's a thumb suck.
Based in science.
It's a thumb suck.
Take it from me.
It's
an estimation if you don't have a water meter.
If you have any scientists that will go on the basis of that kind of science, they would never not be a scientist. Maybe they're this kind of doctors on the front page of that shocks people to try and let them change their That's the only kind of signs you have there. So that, so you're telling me that in your area, in any case, and I'm going to ask the department whether how much part of the other there are some of your 4,000 people that have allocations that we cannot actually say whether they're overused, other than gossip or estimation.
Yeah, where there's no water meters, it is a possibility. Yeah.
And can you tell me how many of those farms don't have water meters? Or small industries that don't have water meters and have only have an allocation?
Well,
in other words, if you have to finish your work in a year and a half, I'm sure you've looked at how many people you have to do. How many of those don't have meters?
Well, in our catchment, if you go about volume of water use, I would say probably about between a third of the water users at least, maybe even close to your half, but maybe probably not quite that much. Most of our major water use is irrigation. 70% of our water use by volume is irrigation, and a lot of that is covered by water meters in our area.
But so it's that a third to a half,
yeah,
may you use these allocations in your area.
A third to a half are not meters.
Yeah. Alva, do you want to add something?
It will be useful to know that, I mean, in the old days, we controlled irrigation by the area irrigated. Now a farmer, say he has a license for 10 hectares, he now irrigates 20 or 30. His obvious first excuse is he's so efficient that he can now irrigate 20 or 30. And that's why we discovered the same thing in Oval, which is a substantial amount of unlawful water use, that we want to enforce metering. And there are regulations on the way to the minister. We want the minister to gazette regulations that we can enforce on a national basis. Metering is currently not enforceable. That's the steps we are taking as a department.
You know, I think you must send me a report on this. How many of these kind of people do we have in each area? And, you know, that we can know what and how big this problem is. Because even if you pass the regulation, then I want to know how long we're going to take to put meters in. I mean, how long is this project going to take us? We need a report like that to give us the information. Okay. I will, in any case, want more information on this in the July meeting. But I think you should give us a report in the meantime that that us can think about some of this. Okay.
Just the Vaal River, which is a major project, because we are worried that it's high expensive water transferred from the Suku that are being main abstracted. So we've got a major project, a 3-year project to run on that. The main issue is that if we want to stand up in court in the end, we must have proper evidence, proper documentation to be able to stand up in court. And that's why it's often so expensive, it's an intensive process. But what I propose, Jerry, is that during that July session...
But I'm not sure, I mean, I don't know what it is we're going to go to court for, or they are going to go to court for. But I cannot see there being a problem that if there is regulation to put meters in, that you put it in, that there can be something illegal about that.
No.
It cannot be illegal, because what you're trying to do is you're trying to verify that they're complying with their contract.
If I can add, one of the biggest headaches of our irrigation boards that have meters is people that bypass the meters and find very clever ways of actually making that meter not tell the truth. So you still... Having the meter is also not necessarily going to just give you the answer. You have to also manage those users properly and use the other means we have in the past of still ensuring that we believe that people are quite ingenious when it comes to these sort of things. And that's one of the big things. They have a lot of bailiffs running around making sure that the meters are actually correctly reading as well.
The thing that worries me is that for some, that means to me that the department doesn't actually know how much water it lets go. Because if you do it, then you'll know that X amount is disappearing somewhere. If you had, I mean, I don't know how you, I'm going to find out later on how you do your bulk and so on, but somewhere along the line, the department surely should know we let X amount of water into Kamati and we only charge for Y amount. Therefore, there's a discrepancy of so much is being used. I'm just worried that we don't know. Ma Manganya?
Thank you.
I don't usually do this, but let Ma ask questions. It's much easier for it.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not
the rep of the department, but I thought last time when they were here, we asked them about the water users. They said others, they don't have exactly the amount of people who are using water because the others, they direct water. I think that's why maybe they have come up with the issue of catchment, because water users will be known from the, even although their program, I don't know how they have they done it, but people on the farms or on the various areas are the people who, the catchment, will know who are the users of water. And then maybe to speed up this issue of putting meters, because by putting meters is the way that we will know who's using water, who's not using water.
Thanks, sir. No, sir, I think the department is the one which is frustrating this catchment agency. Because these people, they operate in the area of jurisdiction, but they don't collect money from those areas. The department collects money and administers that money on their behalf. So how will they do the monitoring, investigations and all these things when they can't really have money at hand? They have to rely on the money being transferred from the department to them. I think this is something that made them not to work very well. Maybe the department, instead of looking into question of metering and whatever, they should look into the question of making themselves reliant so that they can collect their own money and utilize them. Whenever they see the need for meters somewhere else, they have to do it themselves, not wait for the department to transfer money. I think that's something that should be looked into. Thanks, sir.
The monitoring strategy that the department is using on these matters, because it seems there is no monitoring, no what. Everybody is doing as he wishes. They've given a chance to implement issue of water. You don't account. You don't know how to determine prices. You see, it's very, very, very unprocedural to work with water without any measurement, without anything. Let the department give us maybe their strategy of monitoring this thing. Then it's when we can understand it.
Mr. Tiff.
I'm not one of the old members of this committee, but it seems the comments are actually restricting the questions that I wanted to ask. Nevertheless, I think it's important for us to have an audit of the farms to see how many farms are provided with this free water, and who owns which farm. And the monitoring, like oversight, is being commented upon by members of the staff.
Thanks, Chair. Granted, we have one catchment management agency in front of us, and I'm tempted to say that they're probably doing a very good job. It's not what this agency is not the one that scares me. It's what's happening elsewhere that scares me, quite frankly. Because the agency, we've spoken about a lot of things. Lack of capacity around South Africa as a reason for not having catchment agencies. The presumption here is an agency which is relative, let me express the word relative, relatively well capacitated. Because, of course, it's always compared to what? Compared to everyone else. It's doing a good job. So, I mean, I'm reluctant to say, well, you know, we must have, of course, we all, it's a no-brainer that we must know what's being used, you know. And yes, these agencies must be able to say it in time. But there are a couple of learning experiences here. One is it takes a hell of a long time, and I believe it does, because I suspect you could do it, Chairperson, if we use consultants and, you know, outsourced. Presumably they're trying not to do that. The bigger problem is what is happening in the other 80% of South Africa which is not covered. So, I mean, I'm not suggesting any solution. I'm just saying, you know, We have one board which is in one agency which is in front of us. I'm personally reluctant to say come down hard on an agency when in fact the department is responsible for the other rest of South Africa, and the question is what is happening there. Anyway, it obviously has to get done. We have to know what is getting used. And I think this is part of a bigger project by this committee, I would think, to actually get the department to once again give us the timelines of verification and water use licensing for the whole of South Africa. And I think that's what we should be doing in Pretoria in July, is to go and visit the offices which actually do this, verification and licensing. There is a backlog, licensing backlog program. I mean, we must go and see what they are, what they're up to, and where they are on all of this. In conclusion on that point, I mean, the real problem I have is I get more and more nervous about talking about the future with any kind of certainty because we don't know what's going on now. I mean, the water resources strategy is up for review. Good. I think that's great. I'm glad it's up for review. But, I mean, how can you have valuable inputs into the water resource strategy when we're talking about 18 month timelines on the one of the better catchment management agencies to actually complete a review? You can't do it. How can you talk about a country with 98% allocation of water resources when we don't know that that is the case, quite frankly? It could be less. It could be more. And the last point is, I mean, I guess it's not just about the concern of people overusing, it's also about the concern about people who are underusing. Now, granted, those people you would expect to be honest and declare the fact that they're underusing, but if there is no monitoring, if there is no metering, how would we know that we aren't actually giving some people a rough deal, quite frankly? So, I mean, I'm reluctant, I don't want to, you know, say everything is a complete mess, but I think that there is a complete, there is a complete lack of control. And we cannot actually, I mean, it's hard for us to, you know, as legislators and people solve crisis in civil society, you know, it's much harder to actually say, well, we don't believe you, when actually we know, we actually don't really know what's going on. And no one really knows what's going on. So I accept, I'm sorry if my comment doesn't, is really only a summary of the view, but that's actually all I have in my mind at the moment. Until the department comes to us and tells us what is going on a national level. And that's why I really don't want to pick on one catchment management agency, which I would think is probably doing as well as they can.
Oh, it's difficult to know what the answers are. You know, I mean, all of us have made the comments. You know, my problem is this. If there was a strategy the department is implementing, advocate, that they, in this area, if they are implementing it, and they tell us what it is, then we can know. But for example, I asked the agency now, so you're now going to measure the people who's been given allocations but are not meted, so he does that. If he was telling me at the same time we then put in meters, then it makes sense to me. Because then I know, as much as you can cheat a meter maybe and so on, that can happen, but you create separate crimes and offenses for that and separate. Then, but at least I know that when you leave there, then you've got something to monitor it and so on. Then I can say, okay, well, there's a plan. But if we're giving these tasks to the catchment areas to go and do this very tedious and arduous work which the department in the last 3 years been doing already and has not been finalized, but there's no regulations in place yet to allow for meters, then there's an Afrikaans saying something, you sit the gat voor die kop or something, you know, there's some funny thing you say in Afrikaans. We're doing much worse than that, because what we're doing, we're crisis managing, we're giving tasks to these poor catchment management areas which we're not fulfilling, we're giving to them now. But the problem is it doesn't create a solution, or at least a partial solution to the problem. And that is why I've said to, I think what we need is a very urgent report from the department telling us about these regulations and so on. You know, I mean, for example, you see, my head, I'm a lawyer. So I kind of think that everything must be logical. And if it's not logical, you talk against. Now, you see, logically, I think, where does water come from? For the department, from a dam. So I think to myself, well, if there's a dam, there must be a pipe that takes the water out the dam. If there's a pipe that takes the water out the dam, I thought that you would put something on that pipe to say, how much water are you taking out of the dam? Then wherever you take this water, I would have thought, when you take it there, then you put more things to say, how much is going to the others? Now that's my logic, that I would think the way it should work. Somewhere along the line, clearly it doesn't work like that. Now I think what we need to know is how many, even if it's roughly, I mean at least at these catchment areas, they can tell you it's 1/3 to 50% of the people they're checking, their allocations, are people without meters. So I think what we need is to get this thing very quickly. What is the strategy to get the meters there? What are the regulations? What are these legal issues that may not arise, which I just can't understand why there would be legal issues? And then some kind of report, and we can then, as I think members have suggested, in July when we go there, one of the topics is allocations and review and how far those things are. So we can then have a more time that we can sit and actually look at these things. Now those things all have to be get sorted out. Because again, this is my problem. We're allocating new tasks. When were you allocated this in December? December. We allocated this to them in December. The regulations have not been done. We don't have a system to try and make their work more meaningful. You have then further problems that we partially delegating things to CMAs. I mean, Mr. Matebe, I'll go and debate it quietly with him somewhere. He wants to allocate also the money to you guys. I want to try and see that all this doesn't happen. But I can see what he's saying. What he's saying is you can't be half pregnant. It's a mathematical impossibility. You're either pregnant or you're not pregnant. There's no one that ever has been half pregnant. Now, this is what we're doing what he's saying we're doing with the agencies. If you really want the agencies, you want them to work, then if you want them to work, then you must give them everything to do. I mean, you can't give them little bits and pieces of dirty work, and then the other work you can't do. Well, we can debate that may be true, that may be not. Now, I can see what he's saying, is that there would be incentive for the agencies to work differently if, of course, they know they're also going to collect the money out of it. If they're not collecting the money out, they're just checking and verifying, then clearly there's not that kind of, there's not an incentive to put a meter there, there's not a, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I think, I know that that's what he's saying. And that, if we ever do go to a full expansion of the CMAs, well, clearly that is an issue we really have to debate. But can you see what our worry is at the moment? We're operating again like a camel. We give a bit here, we give a hump there, we give a lump there, we give a this there, and so on. And at the moment, we're busy implementing things that we actually haven't sorted out in our mind whether that's the way we should be going and we should be doing them. So, you know, again, that's my worry. We're now spending all these resources and so on doing this verification, allocation. In fact, when you put in the meter, you're going to have to do it again. You'll have to go again because, I mean, the mere fact that for a little period that you monitored them, they were using their allocation. Doesn't mean they're now using their allocation. I mean, the prime thing about farmers, I don't think there's only bankrupt farmers wouldn't have extended their crops over a period of time. So if you needed X amount of water for your crops, I mean, if you got this allocation 20 years ago, you can be sure now that they're doing double the crops. And we still kept the same allocation. So there clearly is going to be a large overuse of the water, the allocation they've got. So, you know, I think we need you guys to sit down and work out, I mean, obviously over and above the review, on this issue. I know the minister is very serious on this issue because of the reason that Mr. Morgan has raised, whether people are actually using their allocations or not. Because in some places, the allocation is to the maximum. So the only way we can give new people water is if we actually check that allocation and change it. Otherwise, you can't. So, if the minister ever wants that to be done, and this is what we're putting in place, she's not going to get answers. She's not going to get answers to her questions she's asking. So, you know, I really think we need that report, and very much telling us, explaining to us very clearly how this is going to be done and rolled out. And And the point that the Morgan makes, these two catchment areas we can have here now, we can get a report from them. But what happens in the rest of the country? There the department is still doing it. Are they actually doing it? Are there people that are actually working on this? It's taken 3 years. What is the prognosis? How much longer it's going to take in the rest of the country? Which is much more than 80%, by the way. I mean, these are only two little areas if you look. So, I want you to start preparing something short for us to tell us what your immediate issues are and what your prognosis. But then longer term, I want you to prepare a full input on all these issues that we've raised for that July meeting, okay? All right. Let's go to the next issue, your next job. Carry on. That's the verification. Let's go on to the... Let's leave verification. Go on to the next job you do.
Project. I just want to state that in our current strategic plan I'll present after this, we do have quite a significant budget for installing water meters. So it is a priority and it is realized, obviously, as an important thing. So it wasn't on our current annual 2019.
But if I understand Helga correctly, there's no law that allows it yet. So until that regulation is in place, you know, your strategic plan is there, but it can't be implemented.
We can install water meters.
So why does he say we need regulations first?
We're just not installing them under any regulation, but there are water meters installed, but we are carrying on installing them because we realize they're important, and a lot of research projects have stated that as well.
Okay, well, until the first challenge.
Okay,
well, we'll hear from the... if you're going to install them, just go ahead, just get going. If there's no law to do it.
Pardon?
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think we must move.
Huh? What? Connections.
Well, we don't monitor in the network of domestic supply. We only monitor the abstractions out of the resource themselves. So, for example, in a municipality, we have to meter their abstraction point out of the river or the dam. Mm-hmm. All of the connections inside the municipal area is their responsibility. Yeah. Well, as I said, it's about a third of the farmers. Yeah.
You said a third to a half. Third to a half of the 4,000. One third to a half, so it's either 4,000, it's more than 1,000. It can be up to 2,000. Between 1,000 and 2,000. That are still only the allocation, but not meter yet. Okay,
I think I must speed up. We have been involved during this year also with some of the international projects. There's an international agreement between our South Africa, Mozambique, and Swaziland that this area is coinciding with. Water Affairs is involved in that agreement and the determination of that agreement, but we are also involved in these projects to implement it, because we will be assisting Water Affairs in implementing those agreements. As mentioned by our chair, we have the twinning arrangement with the Groot-Salem Water Board in the Netherlands, and through that, a number of projects happened during the year. There was a sanitation workshop in the Netherlands where our local municipalities and the Department of Human Settlement from the provincial government.
The school's been reported, the school's been reported.
Yeah, that's all done. So the other main achievement was the draft catchment management strategy was finalized at the end of the financial year and submitted to Water Affairs. It was handled, we're quite proud of the fact that we handled it mostly internally with a small contract with the University of Witwatersrand to assist us on that adaptive management methodology we used here. We used the same method to develop our strategy. And it involved a lot of stakeholder engagement, and they were given the opportunity to share their understandings when we developed our strategy. It must still be gazetted, however, and that must be approved by the Minister for Gazetting for official public comment. So it's still in draft form and submitted to the department for that gazetting. We are awaiting comment, approval to gazette. Another major achievement.
And the strategic plan, over and above verification, what other main areas will it include in the strategic plan?
Our current strategic plan. Well, I'm going to talk about it when I get there. We've got quite a lot of
tasks.
Yeah, we need to go. The operations of river systems, which is basically decisions on releases and restrictions to users in the short term. On our major river, the Crocodile, we set up a committee, and we have sophisticated decision support systems developed by Water Affairs that we are now using on their behalf to make these decisions. We meet once a month, but within each month we make decisions even on a daily basis. And we are also in the process of doing the same thing on the Sabi River operating rules and updating them with Water Affairs, and we will take over the implementation thereof. Pollution control during this year was still performed by the regional office. We had quite a lot of stakeholder participation. We developed a comprehensive stakeholder database, and we had an agreement with Water Affairs that we will do all engagement in the Nkomati area, even with their projects. Okay, finances. It's been stated before, no unqualified audit, and we fully complied with the regulations. We got a budget of just under 21 million. During the year, only 17 million was transferred during the year, and of that 17 million, almost 10 million was only received in the last quarter. This did create a lot of issues for us in that particular year. I'd like to report that at the moment now, these problems have seemed to have been resolved, and we are getting our funding timely. But during that year,
lucky you said that because
It has been resolved, and we now have a decent balance at the moment we can use to operate with. But during that year, it was a serious problem. Even a couple of months where we had to pay salaries late, and posts could not be filled. We are now doing that. So expenditure, and part of this was because the money actually arrived late. We only spent 13.5 million, so of the budget, seven and a half approximately was unspent. We don't have a lot of capital expenditure or CapEx. It's only our office furniture. We're a management organization, so we mostly do water management, and it's mostly staff. So we don't have pump stations and pipelines and such of water boards. I don't know if there's anything else important in terms of time. The next one is about our expenditure on our executive management and our governing board. The stipends are per meeting. You can see the chairperson of the board is a 4,000 stipend, the deputy 3,750, ordinary members 3,500, so on and such. Total paid was 642,000. External members, total paid was 40,000, just under that. We didn't have a CEO, so you'll see the CEO acting allowance was an acting allowance for the one of the executive managers, and all the executive managers are basically paid on a salary level 13, one of the notches in there, which is DPSA at the time. There's all our employees and our equity. 21 employees at the time, 11 African males, 3 white males, and 7 African females. And you can see 4 level 12, this is below the executive management, 3 level 11, and so on. 8 level 9 is the biggest level of employees.
I thought you said those others are on level 13.
Yeah, above this is
SMS.
The executive managers. We have 4 divisions with the executive managers. The water use division, WRPNP is water resources planning and programs, and institution and participation and corporate finance. There's the executive manager on level 13 for each of those divisions.
Okay.
I'd like to get on the strategic plan. So this is basically mentioned. We did quite a lot of policies that were done and reviewed during the year. This is talking about it again. Effective procurement system was put in place. The risk assessment and register was drawn up. Job evaluations with Water Affairs on the DPSA system were done for all positions in the organogram for the first time during that year. We had a few bursaries that were given out previously, and of those bursaries, we managed to appoint 2 people, a BSc Honours in Hydrology and a BSc in Microbiology into the organisation. And a number of policies were done. The delegation of functions were not finalized during that year. As stated, we did receive them now in December 2010, so our current strategic plan incorporates our activities to implement those delegations. I'll get to that in that presentation. The transfer of staff from Water Affairs could also not be finalized during that year because the functions have not been delegated. This is currently in the process of happening. CEO resigned. Our cash management will still be approved for gazetting by the minister, even though it's drafted. The water tariffs and the financial sustainability, I mentioned that all mostly because we are still reliant on the transfers from Water Affairs. They are still developing the tariffs. We are involved in the tariff determination, but Water Affairs is still actually finalizing tariffs and collecting the money and then handing it across to us. If it's not given timely, it gives us a lot of problems in operations. And we did suffer quite a high staff turnover during that year because of the lack of progress on our business plan. respond to that? Current strategic plan that's presented to Water Affairs.
Just do the major.
Yeah, I'll go through it. The presentation you have doesn't have these maps. I just added them so that you can see where we are. I've highlighted in yellow, we're in the top northeastern part of the country, bordering on Mozambique and Swaziland. We have three major rivers, the Kamati, Crocodile, and Sabi, and I'll carry on. These are just showing the water use. You can see that the majority of the water use, 54% in general, is irrigation. We have quite a large amount of water use from forestry, because that's defined as a water user, and we have international obligations. This is just a graph to show for the Kamati and all our major rivers that we are generally in deficit. So the demand for water at the moment is outstripping the supply that's available in general. When we implement the ecological reserve, it's just going to get worse. The key aspects in the area, the availability is very variable. We can have a lot of water in flood years and very, very little in dry years. It's generally overallocated. We've got the Kruger Park, international obligations, strategically important for Eskom, a lot of large land claims amongst the largest in the country, and diverse water users. The initial functions were presented by Water Affairs, so I'm not going to go through them, but basically, as I said, investigate and advise and develop the catchment management strategy are the first two, which we are doing. We have some other sections there at the bottom in terms of pollution control and water quality as well. The new delegations, I don't think I need to talk about them again, but they are mostly around the Schedule 3 of the Act, which enables us to actually make rules to regulate water users, which is basically operating rules on when they are restricted and how much they are restricted by. We can make those rules, and we can actually gazette every year in a drought how much people are restricted by if we would like to.
You can,
as a CMA,
the minister gazette.
I think we've been delegated. We are allowed to put a gazette.
Unconstitutional.
Well, I think we can draft the gazette and then give it to them.
It is a legislative function, and the legislator has given that function to the minister. You can't give it to another structure. Any regulations that are drafted must go through the minister. So just check that out, eh? I mean, Mr. Brian here has said that he thinks it's like it, but just check it out. If it is, I know some other. It's been a problem that's happened in other departments as well. I think it's completely unconstitutional doing it. Okay.
We are looking at the delegations at the moment with Water Affairs because some of the functions should actually, whether they get handed over, should be assigned rather than delegated if they are given over. So that is being looked at. I just wanted to state one of the key initiatives in our current strategic plan to do these new delegations and functions is actually employment of staff, because we are mostly a management agency. Our catchment management strategy with the stakeholders develops 6 strategic action programs. These are included in our current strategic plan. I'm going to highlight them there on the left. This is a table that comes from our catchment management strategy. Along the top are the various chapters of our catchment strategy, and along the left are the action programs developed by the stakeholders. Each of these action programs have been incorporated into our strategic plan. But before I get there, this is just a table to show the Water Affairs and the government outcomes on the left, and a general statement that our strategies are meeting those government objectives and priorities through our various strategic action programs. This is the first page of the main tables in our strategic plan. I'm not going to present all the tables because that's too much detail. I just wanted to show you here that how it's been set. You'll see at the top of the table is the main draft priority. Below that is one of the 5 strategic objectives of the CMA. And then underneath that is the first strategic action program from the CMS. So for each CMA strategic objective, we have the various action programs and the outputs related to that. And then we go on to the next objective, and then we go on to the next government priority. So it's quite easy to roll up the outputs all the way up to the government priorities when you read the strategic plan. On the right, you'll also see 2 columns we've added where we've indicated the functions of the act that we are performing, excuse me, as well as the existing staff, and in bold the staff that we believe we need to appoint to be able to fully perform those functions. These are the main outputs in all of those tables. I'm also not going to go through the right-hand side description, but basically the verification of water use is what we've already talked about. To finalize that, followed by the water allocation plan, which is basically the plan exactly how allocation should be done. Establishing water user associations, the access irrigation boards must be transformed to user associations. This has to be done, and that's also in our plan. I've mentioned the operations of river systems, the decisions that's carrying on, that started already, and this strategic plan includes it, as well as the implementation of the ecological reserve related to that. The metered water use, we've got a project in there to meter one of our priority areas.
Where is that one?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 down.
Authorize and meter the mains of water flow to initiative. Store water meters on the middle commodity. TW transfer staff. Point mission A manager. Technical assistance contract.
Yeah, that's the summaries of
what
we're stating.
Do you have for that?
There's a the budget for the water meters on the middle commodity was $1 million, but the projects are coming in at about half of that, actually, and the technical assistance contract budget is about $800,000.
Okay, go on.
Okay, we have been given the functions to do the water quality monitoring and pollution control. So those are both in our strategic plan. To do inspections and to monitor the existing water affairs, water quality sites, to take over that from them, and to take over their personnel as well to do it, which is in process. Important ones is also under this statement called Operationalized Learning Reflection and Review System, which is a statement you get when you involve universities. But basically that means we have to monitor all the flows and all the gauging stations and get that information in. We're going to be supporting the River Health Program to do their biomonitoring, and we're going to be installing real-time data loggers on all the water affairs gauging stations that don't have them to support our real-time river operations that we do, which is agreed to with water affairs. Just to speed things up, I'm going to carry on. That's our organogram. It's a bit difficult to read, but basically the red text is the highlighted positions that we need to appoint, and the blue text is the staff that is agreed with Water Affairs Regional Office that will be transferred during the year to assist us with the functions. So there's about 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's about 12 staff that will be transferred from the Regional Office, and about the same number of people that need to be appointed, which we are in process of doing. Budget. Okay. It's about $35 million on the ICMA side, and the regional office will be transferring along with that staff the budget for them of about $4.5 million, which brings us to a total budget of about just under $40 million. We did start a lot of projects at the end of the last financial year. It's about $6.7 million. Which we were given the funding late there, and there's a started to be rolling over those funds, and I'll show you the projects linked to them. Below that is basically all the divisions and the governance and how much is being spent on each of that. You'll see there's a budget of about $2.5 million on governance. That includes the governing board as well as the secretary and the section supporting them. So $2.5 million is going towards governance for the total of about $35 million of our budget. Carry on. Splitting the budget per function, you'll see of that $40 million budget, about just $19 million is on salary, wages, and allowances, and about $14.5 million is on goods and services. Of that $14.5 million, $12 million is general expenses, which is actually sort of doing the work. And then $1.5 million is related specifically to the board and the budget for their stipends. On top of that, we've got the water affairs, $3.1 million for wages for those staff, and the $1.2 million for goods and services related to those staff. The 2012, 13, and 13, 14 years have been escalated based on the current CPIX figures for the budget.
These functions that you're fulfilling, and that are being delegated to you slowly and so on, are these the functions that the regional officers perform now?
Where there isn't a CMA and where the function hasn't been delegated, it's performed by the regional officers. And in our case, the regional office has structured to what they call a proto-CMA. so they can easily be unhinged when the time comes, those staff, and that's why it was quite easy to actually identify the staff. Because
so the regional officers do all this kind of local...
Where there is no CMA.
Yeah, where there is no CMA, but that's what they do. This is just being transferred to you, and that's why the staff has to come over and so on.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
At the end of last financial year, we did a budget versus expenditure review, and I just wanted to highlight some of the major ones there just to show that we have reduced our budget on quite a lot of these general items. So this is just a section of some of the detailed items under our goods and services to highlight that we have been making a concerted effort to make sure our budget is reduced and not without too much fat in it. In terms of the actual goods and services, these are the major projects that I just wanted to highlight. I think this is the last slide that we will be doing during this financial year. Some of it's funds that we're rolling over from last year, and some of it's new budget for this year. You'll see there's a significant amount for the verification of water use. Linked to that is the cadastral update project, which is to update the owners and the boundaries of all the farms and properties in the catchment, because that's one of the major issues with finalizing verification, is that that database is not up to date. There's a little bit to finish the CMS when we get the approval to gazette for public comments. We have some maintenance contracts on the sophisticated software that we use that we can call on if we have problems with that software. The Riverflow data loggers is to install these real-time data loggers on the gauging stations. We're supporting the River Health Program of the Kruger National Park and the Mpumalanga Parks Agency. We're installing the water meters in the Middle Kamati, as already mentioned, the general technical assistance contract, specific support to the biomonitoring and the river health program on the Sabi River. There's a budget to do an acid mine drainage survey in the area, and the rest is just general sort of consulting fees for ad hoc issues. The chemical analysis of all the water quality monitoring that's done is currently budgeted for by Water Affairs, because they've got a three-year contract that's still on the go. We will have to budget for that when it's finalized. Most of the challenges have already been mentioned. The appointment of the CEO is still an issue. It was mentioned that we have now resolved to go ahead with that appointment. We're waiting for the approval to gazette the CMS to finalize it. Funding previously was an issue, but that is being sorted out at the moment. Water Affairs still determines the tariffs, although we are involved, and they still collect the money. We have had meetings during the last year with Water Affairs Finance to make a way forward on getting that transferred to us. I do want to quickly add that...
Have they agreed?
We have agreed on a way forward, yeah.
They've agreed to get that you do the tariffs, decide, and collect...
The current agreement is that we will be very involved this year on actually determining what the tariff is for our area. We won't be collecting it in the current year because there are quite a few issues to resolve on the actual software that we just need to look at, and we need to finalize the verification, and so in 2 years' time we'll probably take it over. It's the agreement that we have. I do want to state that as a CMA, we are legally allowed to approach to find other sources of funding as well. So we do have some projects, plans that we developed with funding agencies and ask funding agencies, international agencies and donor funding agencies to assist us. So we have currently do have a couple of projects that are sitting with funding agencies around the world looking for
what
funding.
What process do you do to get this money?
From Water Affairs.
Do you just decide to do it and you approach them?
On funding agencies?
Yeah.
Yes, well, sometimes they approach us for projects. No, we don't do loans at the moment. I don't know whether we can or not. I must actually ask my CFA if they know. She says no. So we don't have loans, and we don't enter into loans.
But you can go to funders and get money from funders.
Yes.
You don't have to do it through the department.
We can go directly to funding agencies. And I mentioned a lot of projects earlier, like the Water Research Commission does a lot of projects in our area, and we advise them on that. So that, in a way, is getting funding because work is being done in the area.
But no one in government is allowed to do that. I mean, everything goes through Treasury. In justice, every little thing you want to do for donations and for funding elsewhere, you have to get approvals and so on. You guys can just do it.
So we don't?
Good gracious. Unbelievable. Any case, go on. Let's finish quickly.
I think that's it.
Wow. That's So all I can say is, wow, and I'm keeping quiet after that, because I know I'm going to get into trouble. Look, I think that you presented a chairperson and CEO. I think you presented a very good document. I like, you know, you've thought through things. Whether I conceptually agree with it is another thing. I mean, I've got huge problems with this whole concept, I must just tell you. But in terms of you have been given a job and that you've done it, I want to tell you, I think you've done it excellently. Particularly under some difficult circumstances where you haven't received money and late and so on. And so, and that you, you know, there was uncertainty and now you're starting to move. So I've got no qualms about that. And all the issues I've raised about questioning this and questioning how does this work, it's got nothing to do with criticizing you or your agency. It's got to do with questioning and asking questions and whether it should be like that more than anything else. So I wanted to say that I really, and under difficult, your input has also been under difficult circumstances, because as you've given input, we've had to ask questions, so why it did. Some others also had to. So I just want to say on the whole that I think you've done a really good job. Obviously, the other issues I've raised is for questions to raise with the department and to talk to minister and so on. Those are separate issues. They've got nothing to do with you necessarily and so on. So thank you very much. I really appreciate your hard work. And I think there's in a short period of time, you've done a lot of good things. I mean, the whole problem is you shouldn't have had to done it. Have done it, because if the department is doing all this, they have all that already. You know what I mean? That's the problem. You know, they have, whether you work out a transport subsistence or so, they've got this. You've got this, they, you know, because you've created a new agency and new boards to create all this, clearly you had to go through that process and you've done very well in the process, okay? There's no problem with that. I'm rushing a bit now because we just need to, in all fairness, also give the other agency a chance to, it'll probably go easier with them because they're not going to have to answer all these other questions. So thank you very much, Chair and CEO. Thanks, Ray. Job well done. The other agency, can you start with us as soon, and you know what things we're concentrating on now, so just go through that and skip the rest, okay?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning to the people we haven't greeted yet. Yes, Chairperson, water is a very difficult subject, and we are dealing with that. The delegation with me, next to me is our acting CEO, Jan van Staden, and Zanella Ngobo is our CFO next to him. The three of us came from Worcester, Chairperson, to join you here in the
Berg.
No, through the mountain.
Geribert.
Yes, sir, we tried to get through the mountain. Chairperson, yes. But I also think, and I will agree to my co-chairperson, that the best for you, and I see you have got a lot of questions about the CMAs, is to come and visit us. Come and see what we are doing. If you work close to ground level, you will see what the need of CMAs are. And I think there's quite a need, especially for the persons that's got allocations, and I get to that just now. But there's definitely a need to get something done, to be able to speak to somebody in that town or in that area, that water management area. But Chairperson, our board consists of 11 people at this stage. We were also 14. But only 12, at the start there were only 12, with one person that was from the regional office that also joined up as a board member, which was very helpful. We also have, we have three committees, the HR, finance, and the technical committee that's doing the job. The appointment of staff in the beginning, Chairperson, was very, very slow because we didn't want to appoint people sitting in the office doing nothing at that stage, so we went through the process very slowly. And that again got us into a catch-22 situation. We didn't have enough personnel, so we couldn't get the delegation. So that was a mistake from our side. So then we started to appoint the people and get on with the work so we can do that. So yes, I would like to agree to you right from the beginning, right from day one. To me, the 19 CMAs in the country was too expensive. We had to join some of these CMAs because CMA in itself, I think it's expensive, and the taxpayer must pay all of this at the end of the day. We have now completed at this stage our strategy. The CEO will elaborate on that, sir. I'm going quickly through all this. Just on previous points that you've discussed in the meeting, you know, from the old allocations of water years ago, it didn't only work through a meter. It was a stream of water, and you get so much of that stream of water for so many hours a week or a month or whatever. That's how it worked. And that was measurable because we're still measuring it with the V-notch. At this stage, we can still measure it with the V-notch. So we know what amount. But the fact in the Western Cape is when water is very, very scarce, the fact is that when you need the water in summertime, there's hardly any water. In the wintertime, there's a lot of water. But when you need the water, so you have to store all this water on your own cost. Yes, what is also very important to me, sir, is that validation and verification is very important because we don't know. We can't take decisions at this stage if you don't know. So for this process, we also already given out the tender, and for this process, it's going to take 18 months, but that not for the full area, but the main areas where the most water is used and the most areas where water can be a problem. That's the mistake.
So you've given it out on tender for someone to, yeah, whoever wins the tender to go and do the verification over an 18-month period?
Certainly, sir.
Is that what you've
done? That's what we've done.
From when?
Starting off from June.
June, okay.
Okay. We've already allocated the tender, sir. But at this stage, I think I must give over to the CEO that he can go through the whole process, what we are doing and what we are intending to do in future, in short, please.
Chairperson, good morning, and thank you very much for the opportunity. I can just go back. I'm currently the acting CEO for the last 3 months. And I heard this morning that it may be the CMA is half pregnant, so I'm not responsible for half pregnancy, but I'm surely are responsible moving forward to make the CMA total.
Well, I hope you're not responsible for the pregnancy.
No, sir, I was coming to that.
That'd be more worrying.
No, I was coming to that. I'm hoping to be also responsible for the pregnancy.
Okay.
But I can say just from the beginning, although the CMA is half pregnant, we're still missing some of the delegations. We already made a hell of a difference regarding water resources management in our area. Because as you mentioned already this morning, especially with the complications here regarding water use and verification of water use, registration of water use, it's quite difficult to manage these type of things from Pretoria. You need to be more locally centralized to manage that. And I think for that reason, the CMA is playing a critical role to do that function for the department. So the BOKMA is, we would like to say the BOKMA is the operating arm of the Department of Water Affairs, and we want to bring water resource management services like quicker to the people in our area. And I think we already succeeded in that. You can see from another report and also from our strategic highlight I'm going to present to you now. Okay, I think we can skip that. Okay. Just a background to the BOKMA. The BOKMA was established in 2005. The representative board was appointed in September 2007. The board consisted out of 13 water groupings. Initial functions that we do in terms of Section 80 of the National Water Act That was already explained by the department and by the ICMI. And then also, very, very gratefully, the additional functions that were delegated by the minister on December of last year. And those additional functions are mostly to do with the control of water use and also the establishment of new water management institutions, and also most important, the one to do with the verification of water use. That's a description of the Gokma area. It's just on the other side, or through the tunnel on the other side, that's the start of our catchment area. It's about the area of 20,000 square kilometers. And the main river is the Breede River. That's where our name is also coming from. And then there's also the rivers on the Overberg West and the Overberg East side. We've got a couple of beautiful estuaries in our water management area. Now go back, please. This is mostly a rural water management area. The dominant economic sector here is irrigated agriculture. There's about 500,000 people living here. There are 7 local municipalities, 2 district municipalities. And I can also say that about 70% of the export grapes and also apples of the country are also produced in this area. And also lastly, and not least, but also this area, for the people that do drink wine, they also produce some wonderful wine. This is like the heart of the winemaking area in the Western Cape.
Of course, it will make your heart happy.
Yeah, but sometimes you cannot mention that too loudly in an audience.
No, that is true. You must be careful.
And just quickly the role, like we see the role in the Bokma in a water value chain. I think initially many years it was decided that the Department of Water Affairs must become a regulator of water use. Now the idea was always you cannot be a regulator and a player. So I think that was one of the main reasons why the CMA was established. Because when you are a player, then you must also be accountable. And I think that's why a board was put in place. Somebody must be accountable to the minister to do certain functions. Because when you go down that value chain, you can also see the function of irrigation board or a water use association. I mean, in our area, The one scheme, the Brandvlei scheme, is about 250 million cubic meters of water allocated from that scheme. It's just impossible to manage all that thousands of users. But luckily, there's a water user association in place that manages that for the CMA or for the Department of Water Affairs. I can promise you, cannot. If that local institution was not in place, it will be fairly extremely to manage that type of water. Also, if you look at international experience, there are many catchment management agencies in other countries also. I think also our neighbor in Zimbabwe is also a catchment management agency that manages water use and that is regulated by the National Department of Water Affairs. So we are not quite unique in this country. We follow standard best good practices that are followed in other countries of the world also. Now, the Gokma strategic challenges. The first one is building legitimacy and credibility. We are quite a fairly new institution, and also this whole concept of CMA is also quite strange to the people of this country, and also to water users in general. So to build that credibility is quite important when water users approach us to deliver a certain service, that we must be able to do that. It's also not a good thing that if somebody approaches the CMA and then we pass the buck again over to the Department of Water Affairs. I mean, that's why we must become fully pregnant so the buck can stop there, we can fulfill all the functions, and the Department of Water Affairs can regulate us. Another challenge is the involvement in stakeholders in decision making. It is vital that we must find out what water users want, what directions they want to follow regarding water resources management. Where are the hotspots? So it's important for the CMA to establish those type of platforms so that we can get the local communities involved in water resources management. It is quite difficult to police water use management from Bokma or even from the side of the Department of Water Affairs. But where do you establish forums? People are watching on each other. They control each other. And if they
who's
can't
on your, control, who's on your board? Which representative group?
Chair, currently on our board, there are from emerging farmers.
Yeah.
There's one from the Western Cape provincial government.
Mm-hmm.
There's one from environmental NGO from the civil side.
Mm-hmm.
There's one from civil society.
Mm-hmm.
There's one from industry and business.
Mm-hmm.
There's one from commercial agriculture, surface water, non-scheme related.
Mm-hmm.
There's one from the statutory conservation environment side.
Mm-hmm.
There's a section, a sector called access to the access to water by the poor rural settlements. There's one potential agricultural water used by emerging farmers. There's one commercial agriculture from groundwater.
Mm-hmm.
There's one commercial agriculture from surface water. And then also there's a representative from the regional office and also input always from the national office in Pretoria.
And do you agree with the previous things that have been said that all the major issues that are going to be delegated to you will have to be decided by that board with all those interest groups on it? Do you agree to that?
No, I do absolutely with that, sir. It's also, we develop a CMS. Many of the major issues currently on the table is in a CMS, and that was debated and approved by the board and now the function of the officials to implement. But the major things will always go to the board.
Yeah, and whatever strategy they agree to would be agreed to by those people with those interests on that board.
Yes, okay. Sir.
No, I just want to see if you agree with it.
No, go ahead. No, the board makes the strategy and the officials we implement.
Go ahead.
So the next challenge is the one about financial challenges. Currently, as you heard, we receive a grant from the Department of Water Affairs. Now, in future, we must move to a situation where the BOCMA, the CMA, can raise and collect own water resource management charges. Now that will also be a challenge to get the right systems in place and also then the risk of people not paying or underpayment of water resource management charges. But also for interest, it will...
Look, I think you must... I want you to change your input. You're trying to justify at the moment why you need the CMA.
Yeah.
I have... And you're trying to respond to some of the questions I've asked. I don't think you should do that. I just want to hear how yours is performing. Because now you're responding all the time why it's such a good thing and why it must be there and so on. I have some fundamental problems with this structure. So it's no use trying to convince me. What you rather be should be telling us is what it is you're doing. And maybe through that we can see what they say. We can just, I think, leave these issues, strategic challenges and so on. Go to the actual functioning.
Okay. Just quickly on this one, the vision of the BOCMA is quality water.
And I want to say whatever issues I've raised on my own, they're not necessarily my party or anything. I want to make that very clear. So, because I'm saying what we're raising here are issues, not decisions that have been taken. It's issues, because I heard someone the other day saying, yeah, he's taking decisions. Not decisions we take here. These are things that we're raising while we're doing our oversight. Why is this like this and like that? Not decisions of the committee. The committee only takes decisions through reports. Please, anyone that wants to say we're taking decisions here, there's nothing like that. Our only decisions are taken through reports, okay? Sorry, go ahead.
The next important for the BOCMA is the BOCMA vision, which is saying quality water for all forever. Now go back, please. Now where is coming from? I just want to explain this vision statement. The water for all means we must share our water resources. The forever means sustainability. And equality means because we are an agricultural water management area, you need good quality of water. If the quality is not good, then you cannot irrigate, and then the whole economy of the region will falter. In our business plan, it's divided into 8 priority areas. Water resources planning, water use management, institutional engagement, water allocation reform, resource protection, information systems, strategic support, and management and governance. On a water resource planning, the two main items is a catchment management strategy and engaged water resource planning processes. We had developed the catchment management strategy with the input of all the stakeholders. We went through an extensive public participation program and the outcome, the final result of the strategy is quite a good one. There are also copies available of our strategy. This strategy is also currently in the department. We're waiting for approval from the minister to gazette the strategy to invite comments from the public. Now, when it is approved, the Bob Miner board will start to implement the CMS. Although many of the things coming out of the CMS is already incorporated in our business strategic plan. The other major part is engaged water resource planning processes. It's also important for the CMS, especially with all the local authorities in our area, to engage with them all the time so that they can make provision for future growth, not only regarding water supply, but also regarding the treatment of sewage effluent. If we can keep them alert all the time, what is required, when it is required, it can only improve our local water resources. The next one is on water use management. We talked about it already, but I want to mention the registration also. In terms of the Act, there are 11 water users, and those water users are supposed to be registered. But currently in the country, not only in our area, many of the water users are not registered. So that's also a function of this validation and verification process, to pick up all the gaps where people have not registered and to force them to register. And of course, they must also then pay.
According to you, is there a process of doing that, or is it just not happening at all? The Act provides that it's not happening.
The Act says people must register, but people who are invited to register, they must come voluntarily forward. It's not voluntary, I mean they're forced by the Act to come forward. But you know, people in general, 100% will not come forward. Maybe 80 or 90%.
So the voluntary process, there's nothing that the department's put in place to get them to register, that you know.
They're not target specific properties to register.
Okay.
It's like more like broad advertising
and
force people to come forward to register.
Okay.
But it's also important, because if you don't know that, then you also don't know what type of water is used. So you must fill the gap. So we must get to the base of water resource management right in the Bokmai area. If the base is right, we know who is registered, what type of water use. Then you can move forward. Then you can plan. You can say, is there enough, not enough? How do you allocate additional water? The same for the water use licensing. Although our current mandate is not to authorize water use, we don't yet have that delegation. We are processing license applications and then for the department to finally authorize. So we take licenses up to the stage of recommendation and the department authorize. And also controlling compliance is vitally important too. When people are giving an allocation, to control those allocations, to make sure that people are not using more than that is legally theirs to
use. The same question I asked just now of the other agency. How many licenses or how many allocations are there in your area that has to be verified? And how many of those percentage-wise do you think don't have a meter which makes that easy?
So I could say in our water management area, we're quite fortunate because many of the large schemes are operated and managed by irrigation board or water user associations. And those water use are all metered. But I will say a gut feeling, I will say about 50% of our area is still lying outside the jurisdiction area of irrigation board and water use associations. So those water use are currently not measured.
They're not measured at all. They're just given an allocation, and then that's been like that since it's been allocated.
It's coming from the old Act. We call it the existing legal water use. You're supposed only to use water that you use in that period 1998 to 1999. That's your legal allocation.
Okay.
Now to determine that is quite a challenge.
Mm. But you're saying there's about 50% of that you.
Yes.
This tender process you talked about is going to have to look at that 50%.
The tender validation verification process, we're going to do the whole area.
So even the irrigation board?
That's right, yes.
All right, good. Thank you.
So the next one is institutional engagement. What's important is the marketing, communication, stakeholder engagement, institutional cooperation. Just quickly, okay, next one. water allocation reform is also quite important for a BLOCMA, also for a government, also for the Department of Water Affairs. But our first step is there, is to determine what volume of water do black farmers actually use in our area. Currently, that figure is not available. And also through this verification process, we try to get a figure to that. The figure currently is only a guesstimate, so it's not scientific proof, a real figure. And then, of course, we want to promote black farmers in our area out there that they must apply for water, and then the CMA will actively assist them to put the application in and handle and manage the process for them. Because currently there's also shortcoming regarding that. People don't know how to apply, can they apply, and how does the process work. And we, in our plan, we're trying to fill that gap. Next one, please. Then the resource protection is more to do with the base of the resource. And there what's important, we must assess the quality of our rivers all the time for continuous monitoring, and also the assessment reports that we provide to our stakeholders to see, that they can see how the water is managed in our area. Also the whole question of the destruction of wetlands, riparian habitats, we put certain things in place to firstly educate the general public not to do this, and what is the importance of those type of things for the river, for the sustainability of the river, and also of course to tell them what they actually are doing is an illegal activity if they want to do that, and they can be prosecuted on that. Next one is on information systems. The big one there is currently the registration database, the WORMS, as discussed earlier, is sitting in the Department of Water Affairs. Now we in the CMA BOKMA, our office is 100 kilometers from the regional office in Belleville. We currently do not have access to that database. So that is not sustainable for a BOKMA, because the public approach us to find out what is registered. We need a registration database to update the verification outcome. But luckily I can report there are processes and systems in place now so that the CMAs can get access to the worms within hopefully the next 12 months. Now, strategic support, finance, human resources, administration, the finance, we must get in a position that the BOKMA can raise and collect our own water resource management charges. It's not a double charge, but currently the charges are paid over to the department and they pay it back to the CMA. The management and governance, the big items. Next one, please. And then our budget for next year, it was submitted to the minister for approval, is a total budget before an inflation adjustment of 17.150 million. And if you look how the budget is divided between the staff cost, overheads, professional services, 7.8 million for staff, 3 million for overheads, and about 5.6 for professional services. Because many of the water resource activities is not a continuous process. So therefore you need to appoint consultants for a short term just to complete that particular process. It's highly skilled skills you require for a short period. That's why you appoint outside service providers. Does the breakdown of the budget in percentages interesting? Only 3.8% of the board cost is that percentage of the total budget. 14% is the management and governance as percent of total budget. 46% is staff cost as percent of total budget. 33% is professional services, and 3% is capital expenditure as percent of total cost. Like the previous speaker said, we're mostly in the business of management and providing a service, so we don't have a lot of capital expenditure. It's mostly for buying a car or a computer or furniture. The alignment of the BOKMA business plan and performance oversight, every quarter, the BOKMA must go to Pretoria to report on our performance, and they are actually very strict on this. if you don't meet some of the targets, they tell you you must speed up your processes, or otherwise you must explain why didn't you reach your target. And also every year we produce an annual report that people can look.
And when you don't, what do? They flog you, tar and feather you.
No, luckily we didn't reach that stage up to now.
I'm very glad to actually meet you.
Yeah.
It helps a bit.
And then just the organogram of the Bokma, we are linked to DPSA. Our highest level on our structure is that of the CEO. That level is that of a chief director, is level 14 in government. Then we've got only two positions in senior management, level 13, and then below.
Is that the equivalent of a chief director, 14?
Our CEO, yes. And our lowest position, our organogram.
19 new chief directors. Okay. Right, sorry.
Yeah. And
it's a side comment this direction, not your direction.
Yeah.
All my side comments are this direction, not yours.
But sir, also the right thing to do when you create chief directors on the one side, you must reduce it on the other side.
Now they're busy this banding regional offices.
But
I don't know how many chief directors there are in the regional offices, but okay.
But our lowest post on our structure is at level 5 on a DPSA staffing structure.
Okay.
And the next part, chair, will be handled by our CFO. That is the presentation of the annual statements of 2009-2010. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Do you have an unqualified report?
Yes, I do.
Every year, sir.
End of story. Okay, just say one or two important things to us, but if you have an unqualified report, you're my friend.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. I'll just take less than 5 minutes of your time.
Good, thank you.
My presentation will cover the objectives of this presentation, annual financial statement, financial performance, financial position, and the cash flow position. And then the objective is to inform this committee of...
No, jump over there.
Okay.
We've
got an unqualified financial statement for the previous 2 years. Okay. Okay. On the 2019 financial year, we've received 11 million from the Department of Water, and that increased by 3% compared to the prior year. At the end, the expenditure for that year was only mainly on the running cost of the business. We didn't have any delegation at that time. So it makes us to have a surplus of 3.7, which has been rolled over to the next financial year, which is 10 and 11. Okay, and then our total asset is made up of equipment that we bought now that Bokma is a new organization, and also the cash on hand, which is the amount that we have at the bank as at end of March by that year. Also the rent deposit money that we paid for the building that we are renting. That results to 5.2 million. That is the total assets that we have at that year. And then our liabilities was made up of all the accruals, which is the debtors which were not paid at the end of the financial year, and also the leave provision. And then our debtors was based on age analysis of 365 days, so which amounted to 614. That is our liability as at 31st of March 2010. Okay. So this slide is showing the statement of change in the net assets, which is the opening balance, which was the closing balance of 89,926, which was rolled over to the next year, which is 910, which is that 926, and the surplus of 3.7, which is the closing balance as at the end that we are currently talking about, which brings us to the 4.6 million at the end of 31st of March 2010. Okay, and then cash flow positions. Cash flow inflow from operations is made out of grants expenditure, which is 7 million, interest that we've earned on the amount which is on bank, and also the finance cost. And the investing activities, it's part of our equipment that we've purchased, the vehicles that we've purchased to run the business. financing activities is operating lease, which is, if you've noticed, on the column 2009, our operating lease, it's more compared to the year that we are reporting on. The reason was that our board entered into an agreement with the landlord for all the renovation that we will make, the rent will not increase, will stay as it is, so that we can cover all the things that we need to cover in order to make the office suitable for the purpose of working. And then as at end of 2010, we closed our bank balance with 818. So in conclusion, like if you notice that to the earlier years, the reason why the net cash flow has gone up compared to the year earlier than that is just because of the amount deposited to by DWA was more by 3%. And also now that Bokma is a growing business, which means our debt has also kept on going and on growing, and also the cash equivalent on the bank also kept on going. So we had an increase on debtors, we had an increase on cash at the bank, but we have a decrease on operating lease due to the agreements which we entered into. Okay. And then the next slide is about the remuneration matters. Our governing body, which we've got 13 members, as it was specified before, for attending the meeting, they are getting 3,000 rand for each.
You can skip all that. That's the same as the other.
Okay.
I like that line at the bottom, though.
No performance bonus were paid to employees. Okay. And also the achievements, that it's not part of the slides. I'll just state some few important things. As Acting CEO mentioned that we have a catchment management strategy. A status quo report has been produced to the Department of Water, and then we're in the process of finalizing that project. And also under water use management, where licensing and registration is still with the department, and then the support given by UBOKMA is to actively involve in assisting the water users due to the licensing applications. UBOKMA also involved in the Letsema project, which is driven by the DWA. And then UBOKMA staff is also involved in the assisting of waste dischargers in the process of registering. Okay, institutional engagement. UBOKMA is a founding member of the forum called Estuary Management Forum, which is also part of assisting our water users. And also, UBOKMA also celebrated the National Water Week on the 15th to 21st of March that year. UBOKMA targeted the schools, about six schools that we visited that year, in order for them to help us to achieve our mandate of saving water. After that six schools, we've got about 150 teachers, 150 children, and 120 teachers. Cooperation with Netherlands. UBOKMA has also got a partnership or a relationship with Netherlands and also its counterpart.
All these agencies like the Netherlands, right? Very interesting.
Yeah, the purpose of having this partnership is to share best practices with Netherlands and also the Brede Valley Municipality, the Overstrand Municipality, and the Netherlands Municipality. We've got a memorandum of understanding, which is in order to achieve these best practices.
How many times a year do you have to travel there?
Maybe once a year. We don't travel. Yeah, most of the time they are coming to South Africa. Okay, and then building legitimacy. We've also got a meet and greet session. We've tried to target the decision makers within the water management area in order to make them aware of the existence of agency. And then advisory role. Also, UBOKMA is playing a good role in advising emerging farmers and the local municipalities. UBOKMA also has got a human resource department, which has got we've got about 14 staff members at the moment, as at year end 2019. And then most of the policies have been developed, which is finally approved by the board. And also, UBOKMA is aligning itself with the public services, like in terms of non-SMS members, medical aid, pension funds, and attending checks. We are using the policies of the public services.
If you were clever, you would just use the other one from the agency there and adapt it to you. They've already gone through the process. It will save you a lot of work.
Okay. and thank you very much.
The problem with 19 agencies, each one is now developing their own policies and their own things. But that's not a criticism, it's just an observation.
Okay, that's all from my side, Chair.
Thank you very much, ma'am. All right, there's a little bit of time for questions if you want to ask anything. I think, again, it seems that with how long they've been existing and the work they're doing it as well as they can under the circumstances, so I don't think there's much to question or answer about the specific activities. But there's still a bit of time if anyone has a question. Mr. Tej.
Yes, just a small question here. Under our water allocation reform, there's a concern that the farmers are not complying. And I just want to make an example of the registration process during election time, that the government didn't take it for granted that people do understand that they must go and register and the importance of registering, regardless of who you vote for. So here I want to know if there is any mechanism in place for awareness campaigns for people to come and comply to registration.
The department can also answer that. Anyone, other questions? Okay. Department, you want to answer that? That's more to you. This issue that was observed, that one of the requirements of the Act is registration of 14 different types of water users, is it? 14? 11. Is there a process in the department to actually get this going, or are we just leaving it to... to good fortune? I think it looks like good fortune has won the day. Yes, ma'am. I hope you're also in the department.
Yes, I am in the department. Thank you.
Okay.
With regards to the support to the emerging farmers in terms of what's required from them around completing applications, so what we have is we've got a program specifically geared at towards emerging farmers, and in the, from the regional office, we've got other water management areas as well, where we have those projects in place. And what we do, we've got community offices that actually engage with those stakeholders and ensure that they are capacitated in terms of training, but also ensure that they're supported in terms of the documents that needs to be completed. Even with the licensing process, what we've done now is specifically when we receive applications, we have assigned a specific officer to take the applicants through the process to support them.
Hey, I hope these licenses are subject to a meter. You want to solve a lot of your problems legally. Make your license subject to a meter being installed and not tampered with. You know, it can be taken away if it's tampered with. I mean, those are the kind of conditions we must attach to licenses, so that you don't have to create further regulations and things like that. But in any case, I hope that's, you know, we'll see. I don't know how that system works. Yes, sir.
Chair, can I just add, we had an open day. I think my colleague forgot to mention that. We had an open day. We went out to the public, and we said, please come forward. We are there as a department, and we work closely with our CMS to say, please come through. And I'm not quite sure. We have just one in this area. How many in this area?
Is that also to do with registration,
yes,
or just
registration? Other information? Is there just to get the people?
There's no program specific to do that. You guys have did it in the Western Cape, or is there a specific program in the department to get this registration done properly?
Specific program? No.
Is there someone that's kind of, you know, is it the kind of thing that we're just leaving it to fate, or is it being driven so that we can make sure? You see, what the gentleman says, I don't know the Act, but it makes sense to me, so that's why I'm asking the question. He says the Act, of course, has been drafted that the one thing follows the other. You register, then you do this, then you do that. So he's saying, well, because we didn't start from scratch, we already, you know, there were already water users by the time this Act came in place. Now, what should happen if you want to do things properly is this: you should put the building blocks in place. First, registration, so you know then it starts. And then you take all the old ones and you fit them into that and you clean it up, and then you've got a nice system going. Now, it seems to me that is not happening systematically in an organized fashion. For example, the registration is not happening in an organized fashion. People are obliged to do so, but they don't necessarily do so.
But then you did a public thing to say, please, you must register.
Right, yeah. And then we started off by going there to say, please, let's come forward. And then also we'll pick it up in the VNV, which I think they reported that they are doing the VNV. So part of that would be not only the verification and validation, but also to but I think there's still a gap on the what your question was on our people. See, the question is a paradox. Especially black people, probably people that were deprived before, gender or wise also. They don't know they must come forward. So how do you ask them? Because our question, our answer, very quick answer would be, but they're not coming forward. But how do they know they should come forward? And this is part of what we're doing, but I don't think we're doing enough, but we're trying, and probably we should then just endeavor to do more on that.
Just to follow up, Chair, that for people who are previously disadvantaged, language could be a barrier. So if we don't maybe utilize radios in different languages, I don't think we'll get it right. That's the most efficient and convenient way of reaching many people in a short space of time.
Mr. Skosana.
Chairperson, thank you. Chairperson, I should think the department must take a consideration on what Western Cape is doing. And when Western Cape is responding to issues to the masses, I expect Gauteng, Mpumalanga, Northern Cape, and whoever to respond like that, which means it must be uniform. They are able now to tell us more about their operation on the ground. Now, what about the other provinces, which means the department must take a responsibility on that to make sure that all the regional offices are doing their work like Western Cape. Thank you.
Chair, thank you. I just want to add, I think registration started in 2001. Mm. Since then, in the Western Cape, there were many, many roadshows trying to contact all water users. But it's always the fact, like tax collection. Not all of the people are registered for tax. Some people will stay illegal. But now of this process, we try to focus on where are the people illegal. Just another comment on how do you explain to emerging farmers or the process or involve them in the whole process. But my remark is now not to justify the CMA. But all I want to say, on our board, there are members representing emerging farmers. And the board members, they are fairly organized. When you go lower down, emerging farmers, they are fairly organized in the breeder Overberg area. So we can send information and signals through our board members down to the lower structures so that we can get hold of those people and explain the process to them. And also with the development of our catchment management strategy, we have also created the emerging farmer forum. So we also use that structure to communicate to emerging farmers, to tell them what is required, how they can register, how do they get access to water resource management services that the government is providing through the CMA.
Okay. Anyone else? Yes, sir?
Please allow me to say this, Chair. But without the CMA, we wouldn't have had a CMS in a short space of time. So I think there's just that one great achievement of a catchment management strategy that is ready for government gazette that will manage water within a water management area was achieved, I think, because of the dedicated, focused work that has been done by an agency where probably we should say that as a department we're just a bit too thin on the ground and too wide apart, and we should then focus. So just on that, I would share through you also just to commend that the CMA has done the job and thank you for what it's worth. Thanks, Chair.
Yeah, you like controversy. You obviously like to look for trouble. All right. Good job. Excellent. Wonderful. Perfect. Let me put out a superlative. Okay, is that anyone has further questions? We're happy. All right, look, I want the department to look at this. No one is denying that the
functions that are being fulfilled by a CMA is important functions to be performed by someone. That's not the issue that's being asked. The question that's being asked is that the way that we have it now, that you have these provincial structures which are doing all these functions, they're doing it badly. So because they're doing it badly, we're disbanding them and we're now creating new structures. It's an old government thing. One thing works badly, you create a new one, and somehow you think that'll work better. The problem, of course, with that is, and in this case here is a prime example, everything about government, again, applies to the structure you're creating. At least sometimes, like with SARS, you created SARS as a separate entity, and you gave them different salary structures because you wanted to draw a certain type of skilled person in there, and not without using the government salary. So there's some kind of justification. So no one is denying those functions before. The question, the strategic and philosophical question the department has to ask itself is, in any structure of government, it's your minister that's in charge, your minister is your board of directors, your minister is in charge, makes policy, goes to cabinet, do all that, and is in charge for this whole structure. If your minister is in charge of the structure, the minister gives direct instruction, let's assume that this is a catchment area, the way that Mr. Morgan described it. It follows these new areas, not the provincial ones. The question is, what is the most efficient institutional arrangement? Will it be for the minister to make policies and we don't have to reinvent all these policies and these papers and things, and actually have people there that is a proper structure with all these people that fulfill these functions as they are doing? Do you do that, or do you create these people and create new employment, new people that you're employing, so you're re-employing all those, taking some people from the regional structure and putting them there, who couldn't do the job in any case last time, you're now going to keep them in this structure. Do you do that and create the further impediment of putting boards with CEOs, with CFOs, and that whole expensive structure you want to duplicate in 19 or 9, depending on how much you take it, throughout the country, where you have a very efficient line of structure? That's the strategic question you have to ask yourself. Because, of course, this structure, the other issue that Mr. Morgan has raised, and it hasn't yet arisen, because they haven't had all the functions they've had. But when they have all the functions they had, the question you have to ask yourself is, when you institutionalize conflict at the board level, where you make decisions, at the moment the minister makes decisions, she makes a decision, that's it, there's it, it's made. She gets a memo, she makes it, doom, it's made. Now, to make decisions at this level, when you've transferred all these powers to these CMAs, you're going to have to the board to make these decisions. The board is filled with people with their self-interest. 12 of them, in fact. 14 of them, in fact. Once controversial issues start arising there, to what extent is this board going to be able to make those decisions that are politically necessary to be able to move, which a minister now makes immediately? That is the strategic question we have to ask ourselves. Over and above all the costs and expenses we're creating by creating CEOs and so on, if you have the same setup with a chief director at the catchment, for the catchment area, with the same staff and all the things they're doing, that's the strategic question we have to ask ourselves. I'm not going to answer the question now, which I think is the best one. I think you know what my issues are. But if you start institutionalizing new places where decisions are made, and it's not in the department, and it's then a structure that consists of 12, 13 different interest groups. I mean, we've seen it in some other organizations where exactly you had those issues. In fact, we had one structure that has completely stopped operating. Completely and utterly. The board has refused to pass a strategic plan. Why? Because they don't agree with each other. What happens when these difficult issues start getting decisions made? Those are the strategic issues we have to ask ourselves. And of course, the issue, and I want to emphasize this issue Mr. Morgan has made, the concept of having to consult and properly consult at a local level is not something that I think we will compromise on. That's important. But whether you actually create a structure which institutionalizes the decision-making and say that is the consultation we're doing, or whether you have separate consultation structures, which are, by the way, for example, I saw in the water boards. One of the big weaknesses of the there's a consultation process, but there's no structure. So how do they consult? They write a letter to the municipality and say, what do you think about this? That's consultation. But, of course, the issue of advisory structures at this level is another issue. So those, I don't want to be misunderstood on this issue. Those are the strategic issues I'm saying we need to look at. If someone tells me that this structure is the better one, well, so be it. Let's move on. Let's implement it quickly. But if someone tells me that we're going to, as I see it, as we go ahead, and you start institutionalizing that water management takes place in separately created agencies who have their own board of directors, and you've institutionalized the potential of conflict in that area, if that's going to work, then let's so be it. But if not, then what we should rather be doing is looking at how you capacitate us, again, do the division what Mr. Morgan has said of different catchment areas, not according to provincial boundaries. You then create a properly structure, which we're now doing. We're giving the budget to the agency, by the way, to now employ new people and new positions and so on. If you're doing that, let's assume there's going to be 9 catchment areas. And you create proper advisory structures, which are real structures, not you write letters to it to consult. Then you have to look at those models, and that is the philosophical questions I think we should have been looking at. Okay. Now, those are not issues, of course, for the agency at this moment. They just have to do the job the best, and both of them are doing a good job at the moment. But these other bigger issues, 17 years into our democracy, we have to ask ourselves those questions. Because, you see, the problem is, one of them raised, you can't be the regulator and you can be the... I don't agree with that. I think that's nonsense. Because, in any case, what is the agencies asking for? Exactly to do that, which government did. They, for example, want to decide on the tariff. They want to collect the tariff. So where they're saying we're doing all the things in one structure, they now want us to put it all in another structure. So those are the things we should start thinking of. In the end of the day, if we go through a process and we think that's the right way of doing it, well, fine. I'm very happy to do that. But I think we have to start thinking of this. These things are not working. And because they're not working, we think that the way to do it is to create new structures. I know. I mean, I had the same things in justice, exactly the same. If it doesn't work, create a new structure. Then you say, but if you create a new structure, do you realize that all the staff you've got here now, for example, on court services, let me use an example. Courts, judges in that field, that they must administer their courts. I say you must administer your adjudication and do your cases without interference, but leave the administration to government where it belongs. Now, if you assume it's going to happen, let's assume that you move the administration. What does that mean? Now you have to employ all the staff to do the administration there. What do you do with the whole Department of Justice that exists today just to do that administration? This is the same issue we're facing here. You're taking, you're disbanding the provincial structures, which I'll be interested to know what that DDG thinks about being written off and being disbanded. But you're disbanding them and you're putting them into a new structure, and you've now created the further difficulties of creating boards of directors, so therefore the minister doesn't make the decision. The board of directors does. And all of them have, they don't go there without baggage, and they don't go with their self. They go there, they are put there for their self-interest. They are put there because they're emerging black farmers. They are put there because they're presently the commercial farmers. So what interest do you think they're looking at? Okay. So those are the issues I think we've raised in this debate. As far as the structures that exist now, well done. Give yourself a salary increase, just not a bonus. Okay. That brings us to the end. I think you guys need to let us have a list again of all the things that have to be done. Try and do it this year still. On these issues, really, there are serious preparations the department must do. And, you know, Toko, you know, you should go to your DG and speak to him and say to him that there's really, you know, when we come there, we're taking a whole week of our time to come and spend with you to deal with these things in more detail and to have some nice debates and discussions, okay? All right? So you guys must be prepared for it. There's no use us coming there and say, well, there's still a regulation that we filed. Maybe we're going to meet it. We don't know. That's not it. You must tell us that these are the things that are going to be seen at that, because that's where we have to grapple with these issues, okay? Thank you to everyone. Thank you to the committee. We're not meeting next Tuesday.
Right, so you're very lucky. We've had to postpone the Water Advisory Council because they knew and they still haven't gone through all their processes and their discussions with Minister and that. So it's useless to engage when they haven't had a discussion with Minister, because that's who they're going to advise, Minister. So they're not here. And then next Wednesday, we're now calling Kopo. Kopo are now coming next Wednesday. Remember, they weren't here yesterday, okay? And then we're still waiting. The department is engaging Bushbuck Ridge and Borshello. And when they're ready, we'll get them. Okay? And our preparations for the acid mine drainage is still going on for the week after that. All right. Thank you very much to the two agencies. Thank you for all your preparations and hard work. Please tell all your staff we think you're doing well. Keep going. Mr. Morgan? No. Okay. All right. We can adjourn. There's a bit of a finger lunch there. Just see what type of food we have to eat. If there's any kind of theories going around that we're on a gravy train, just have a look there at that food. And please have your finger lunch.
So what week are you in Pretoria for in July?
We'll let you know.
Okay.
It'll be towards the end.
Thanks.
We still have to get approvals and we still have to decide on the agenda and all that stuff. Why aren't you drafting the course on the water course? Maybe what we should do is maybe we shouldn't, like last time you did on the annual report and you did on the tax. Maybe what we must just do is just do on the tax. Yeah, but at this stage, my priority with you is we've now gone through those water board issues. And I think, I'm not sure if I want to report on all these, but at least on the tariffs, it's something that we should be saying something. So I think if you take last year's report, you'll see there were two. One was an annual report, one was a tariff. You just take the one with the tariffs. And just, not my dear, so take that and just put the latest details in. So this way, we have at least something to report without at this stage going into debates on the rules and the what's and the how's. How many of them are there? Just make the priority the carrots. Because, you know, what is happening at the moment is taking very long to get the ports out. That's without blaming anyone. It's just the fact that sometimes I need to have a problem. What's wrong? What happened here? About? Huh? Oh, my God. people, I don't know why I bloody send it to my decision. I'm saying to them, the other day I spoke to Mama Bola, I said, hey, I'm not asking you to get CVs and to check whether he's the right. I said, the person has offered himself without a single cent being paid in the past. I've done it in the past, but, you know, I thought, well, maybe there's new procedures in Parliament since I was... I used to have six Harvard students at once with me.
I'm going to bed.